This episode of the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Why? What?
That's it.
If I don't clear my sinuses, I'll snore all night.
You spilled beer all over the bed, you smoke, you mess up the bathroom.
Well, who let you stay in the room? I even let you pay for it so you wouldn't feel like an intruder, which you most certainly are.
Oh, I'm an intruder.
Yes, you're an intruder. I was having a perfectly nice trip until you walked into my life.
I walked into your life. Who was that who talked my ear off on the plane? Who was that? I'm curious.
Well, who told you to book a room? I did, out of the goodness of my dumb old heart. Boy, you're an ungrateful jackass. Well, go ahead, sleep in the lobby, see if I care. I hope you wake up so stiff you can't even move.
You're no saint. You got a free cab, you got a free room, and someone who'll listen to your boring stories. I mean, didn't you notice on the plane when you started talking, eventually I started reading the vomit bag? Didn't that give you some sort of clue, like, hey, maybe this guy's not enjoying it? You know, everything is not an anecdote. You have to discriminate. You choose things that are funny or mildly amusing or interesting. You're a miracle. Your stories have none of that. They're not even amusing accidentally. Honey, I'd like you to meet Del Griffith. He's got some amusing anecdotes for you. Oh, and here's a gun so you can blow your brains out. You'll thank me for it. I could tolerate any insurance seminar. For days, I could sit there and listen to them go on and on with a big smile on my face. They'd say, how can you stand it? And I'd say, because I've been with Del Griffith. I can take anything. You know what that'd say? That'd say, I know what you mean. The shower curtain ring guy. Whoa. It's like going on a date with a chatty Kathy doll. I expect you have a little string on your chest, you know, that I pull out and have to snap back. Except I wouldn't pull it out and snap it back. You would.
It is 21 minutes after the hour of one, and this the month of November in the year of our Lord 2010. Thank you for coming along and making part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, the home of holiday fun. Thank you for joining us. It is Thursday, November 25th, 2010, and welcome to day 12. Also, Thanksgiving, the Rick Emerson Show's Thanksgiving edition for 2010. Draw near. That he might be amused. By the way, let me just say this about that Planes, Trains, and Automobiles cut. I got three things to say about that. One is, just every time I hear that, it makes me miss John Hughes. Actually, I got four things to say. One, every time I hear that, it makes me miss John Hughes. Two, it's hard to believe that that movie was written by the same guy that did the story about the party clown. What was it, raping, and there was a pony at some point in the story?
Yeah, and I don't know for a fact that John Hughes wrote that story. It's just, I seem to recall that he did when he wrote for National Lampoon, but it could have been written by someone else.
All right, but it's entirely possible because he wrote the original story for National Lampoon on which they based National Lampoon's Vacation. Mm-hmm. So I know that a lot of their more trenchant comedy and off-putting satire came from him. You know, he became a farmer at the end of his life. He was just sitting around, well, I guess when it wasn't sitting, but figuratively, he just sort of was sitting around farming, and that was it.
He said, I have a whole lot of money, and Hollywood sucks. I'm just going to move somewhere else and raise my family and not be that guy anymore.
And here's the thing, once he was no longer useful to us, God removed him. So I'm just saying, if you have a gift, you better keep using that.
Eventually.
God just decides that you no longer need to be on the board. You know what I mean? If you're not going to round the bases, you can just go sit in the dugout. Anyway, so that was the second observation I had to make. The third observation, I'll skip right to observation number four. No? I'll do observation four, then I'll go back to observation number three. Observation number four is, it's pretty savvy that he said this at Thanksgiving, Because he could have just... I would be amazed if the story wasn't originally set at Christmas, but somebody, it may have been John Hughes himself, or maybe his agent, or maybe somebody at the studio, might have actually just decided that there's just too much Christmas stuff already and you can't really differentiate yourself. Because right now, I challenge you to come up with another mainstream Hollywood film set at Thanksgiving. Don Taylor.
Home for the Holidays.
I don't even know that I know what Home for the Holidays is.
Directed by Jodie Foster, starred Holly Hunter and Robert Downey Jr., and Dylan McDermott.
Is this a movie that you've imagined?
No, it's a real movie, and I love it. It's a really terrific movie.
I don't even think I've ever heard of that film.
It's hilarious.
See, normally when you reference a film that I haven't seen, it's because, as Tim Riley would note, because it's before Star Wars, so therefore it doesn't... to men such as myself, you have to labor long. You have to go down into the deep, cold storage of your brain and go, oh, okay. So there's Home for the Holidays. There's Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Is that it?
There's got to be more, but I can't think of them.
That's what I'm saying. So it's like the field virtually to himself. When did that come out?
Mid-90s.
See? So he had like a good... He probably had a good 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years. That's why it just became... It's like how they started playing It's a Wonderful Life all the time because it was in the public domain. And it was just like free crap that they could put on television. Hey, look, we don't have to pay for this. Let's just do this and Night of the Living Dead over and over again, back to back. So with Planes, Trains, and Automobiles... Like, you know, it was really the only thing they had that was appropriate for the holiday, and it just began straddling the third week of November like Colossus. So well done. Fourth thing, I don't know that it's a fact, but it may be. I don't want to say this definitively. It may be the best Steve Martin performance like that has ever been committed to at the celluloid. He's done a lot of great things. Steve Martin made a lot of great movies. I'm telling you right there. And that line reading when he says, and it's the here's the thing about that scene we just played. It's the slight pauses and hesitations, the almost unhearable. I mean, they're very missable double takes when he starts to speak. It's when he says that line, they're not even amusing accidentally, right? And it's that he drops a syllable there, and it's not accidentally, it's accidentally. And it's just the way that he snaps that word off at the end. It really is just one of the finest deliveries he's ever had.
The thing I really like about that speech, too, is that it starts out, it's one of those great speeches that starts out hilarious, and then he just keeps taking it over that cliff into cruel.
Right.
And it becomes actually uncomfortable because you start, you know, disliking him.
Right.
Like about two-thirds of the way through it. And it ceases to really be funny anymore. But he knows it. I mean, that was the intent, and it's just beautifully played.
And never mind. Now I'm just going to start talking about Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. So I'll ratchet that back. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It is Thursday. It is Thanksgiving. If you'd like to join us telephonically today, as many folks are off from work or at home, I don't know, hiding in a closet, boozing before they have to go spend time with their unlikable family. It's 503-505. I mean, I'm just guessing. I could be way off. It's 503-505-6964. The great on-turning of the phones happens now. There we go. 503-505-6964 with your comments, questions, clarifications, combinations of the above, ruminations, ponderings, amusements of yourself and others you'd like to share with us. It's 503-505-6964. You can also text if you like. It's Rick Emerson Show at Skype. That is Rick Emerson Show, and it's our Skype username. You can email. It's rick@rickemerson.com, dawn@rickemerson.com, or we're in the text box as well. Those are some of the many ways you can engage with us. We also have facebook.com/rickemerson, twitter.com/rickemerson. Rick Emerson, Rick Emerson, Rick Emerson. Blah, 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 blah.
It's all about you.
Rinse, wash, repeat. Don Taylor is tracking the following headlines for you on this Thanksgiving afternoon.
Large storms slow holiday travel. Johnson & Johnson recalls children's Benadryl. And President Obama spends Thanksgiving just like regular folks.
Several helpings of what, Don?
Food.
That's right. Job watch coming up today. Your penis watch coming up today. By the way, I don't know the actual story that goes along with it, but I have heard the audio that accompanies today's penis watch. Because normally it's like I'll see the story, but then you've got some horrific sound that I haven't been privy to. Today it's the opposite. Today I've heard the sound. I don't know the story behind it. I don't know what I don't know the context. I don't know what sort of factual happenings are wrapped around this particular audio cut. But you sent it to me this morning, and you said, "Well, look, there's some there's some profanity we'll need to take out of there because the Rick Emerson Show doesn't work blue." So I prepared the sound, but I have no idea why any of this happened. So we'll get to the penis watch coming up here in just a bit. Mr. David Walker of badassmofo.com will be joining us later on. Let's see, what else do we have? Aaron Duran for geekinthecity.com stepping out of the program here in just a moment. We'll do your top five thank you songs, which is awesome, by the way. Let me just...
I guessed one of them. I know I did.
It is awesome. No, I had to double check. It's fantastic. So we'll get to your top five later on. Top five thank you songs. Let's see. What else? Oh, and also there's booze. I mean, not that that really helps you much. Unless you're drinking at home and you want to feel like, you know, less alone and pathetic, in which
case...
Drink
along with us.
Really, Dom was drinking, I think, before it was even officially afternoon. I think before the before Legion of News even started, I think you were getting your bourbon on over there. Am I right about that?
I did. I made myself a cup of coffee, and there's some kind of lactose-free hazelnut creamer in there that I bought at Trader Joe's.
Mm.
So I put some of that in there and made it like a little hazelnut coffee. And then poured some Maker's Mark in it.
If you'd been here in the studio at about 11:55 this morning, I think you would have actually heard Don Taylor saying, oh, sweet caffeine and alcohol, and then like swirling them with a ballpoint pen and then right down the gullet.
And now I'm drinking eggnog.
It's going to be the best day ever. By the way, and I made a Twitter reference about this early this morning, I said something to the effect that behold the mighty power of the American marketing industry. I don't drink at all, but I found myself buying multiple bottles of this dark ale called Slayer. And it's like Slay like Santa Slay, S-L-E-I-G-H or whatever. And I bought like three, they're huge. I mean, the bottles are massive. It's like half a gallon or something, and I bought three of them. And the only reason I bought three is because I couldn't carry any more. So I got some Ebenezer Ale as well, which is in this fridge in the corner of the studio. Also, there's some Viso. You brought, what, turkey?
I brought turkey, and I brought some delicious homemade cranberry sauce, a red wine pomegranate cranberry sauce. And I also made... sweet potato spoon bread, which my husband did not put into the car. So it's still sitting
in my house.
So it's
safe at home.
It's safe at home.
And you've got multiple bags of pirate's booty.
We do, because Dan Clark, our pirate friend Dan Clark, brought us a case of white cheddar pirate booty. And which, if you've never had the pirate booty.
It's awesome.
It's a puffed rice and corn puff cereal. So ostensibly it's healthy.
It's
but probably not if you eat an entire bag like I'm doing right now.
It's like a Cheeto type product, but it's better. It's better and better for you.
Yeah.
The better for you part doesn't really matter so much to me, but it is better tasting. There's also there's vegetable booty as well, which is which I believe is like it's where they puffed up. It's not corn, but it's like beets or tomatoes or something that they puffed into sort of Cheeto type shapes.
Apparently, it also comes in barbecue flavor, sour cream and onion, sea salt and vinegar, and New York pizza.
Okay, then. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. There's also a pie, is there not?
There is. There's a pumpkin pie, and there's a can of whipped cream in the fridge.
Oh, excellent. You said you didn't have any preference for bread, so I just defaulted to what I was doing. I got that, I want to say Clamato, but that's wrong.
Calamata.
Calamata, with has the olives studded throughout it.
I love that bread.
And then I spent, because I didn't, you know, because we talked last night, you said, you know, I know that you were thinking I was going to go to the store last night, because you said this morning, well, the stores were open on Wednesday, Rick Emerson, but I assumed that all the stores were open this morning because I figured that everybody's like me and that they forget until the last minute of like, oh my God, I don't have anything ready. And then they go to the store. So Trader Joe's was closed. Now, Safeway and Fred Meyer were actually open, but Trader Joe's, which is where I usually get that pub cheese, Trader Joe's closed. Not open at any time. There was nothing available to me there for purchase, so I was unable to get the pub cheese, which was theoretically going to accompany that olive bread. So
you
just
bought
have
no cheese at all.
That's right.
Because apparently in Safeway there was no other cheese at all.
This is sort of, you know what it is? It's like a fermented dairy equivalent. If I can't have it, no one will.
Oh, right.
But if I can't have that cheese, there's going to be no cheese of any kind.
Okay.
We are fundamentally cheeseless here on this Thanksgiving. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. We'll have a geektastic announcement here in just one moment. And this is something that I have been shielding you from. And again, you may know part of this. I don't know if you know all of it. Before we do that, though, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. From geekinthecity.com. Our good friend, Mr. Aaron Duran, joining us here for our live in studio Thanksgiving spectacular. Hello, sir.
Hello. How's it going?
Hey, how are you?
Have some pirate booty.
Oh, this stuff is so good.
By the way,
you could probably like masticate this and spit it on the bread.
You have to,
bread.
Don't ever say that. you have to thank Dan for. How is it that he came to, and don't tell me he looted it from somewhere? How is it that he you know, plundered himself a case of pirate booty or whatever?
Pirate booty is a sponsor of the Swashbucklers Ball.
Ah.
And they brought him a pallet of pirate's booty.
Like an actual pallet?
Like a pallet, like if you were to go to a warehouse, you had to load up. You know, if you had to stock
the
Trader Joe's.
The guy in a forklift?
Yeah. So I think it was 40 cases of pirate's booty.
Excellent.
Wow.
That's fantastic.
Along with another company, Kraken Rum, that gave him about 10 cases of liter and a half bottles of rum.
All right, then.
So it's good times at the Clark House.
He did not bring us a bottle of Kraken Rum,
sadly. Pretty sure that's not Lyft anymore.
Yeah, the rum is always the... with a Kraken on the front of it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's got dual handles on the side, so it looks like tentacles.
Somebody should make a sort of snack chip, like a cracker-type product that's like a Kraken.
Kraken crackers.
A Kraken crackers. Hey, you know what somebody...
I think they have that at, like, the Asian grocery stores already.
You know what there should be? There should be a... not necessarily a fetish place, but like some sort of like a fetishized kind of strip club, like, you know, where they put a heavy emphasis on the voyeuristic aspect of it, and it should be called Power to the People. Power to the People. Okay, now you're just doing the wry NPR smile right now.
Like, I thought you were going to make a tentacle reference.
Stephen Gould or some nonsense. Fine, whatever, fine.
What,
doesn't matter.
Do you want me to laugh insincerely?
No, you know, not anymore. Not if you're going to tell everybody it's insincere. That kind of defeats the purpose, doesn't it, Dawn?
But then it's all the more glorious when I genuinely laugh at the good stuff, when it's golden.
Now I don't believe that anything is genuine. Now I think it's all just a filthy lie. It's a filthy, horrible, the stench of deception filling the room. That's okay. Job Watch coming up today. Peanuts Watch. Mr. David Walker joining us. We'll get the top five thank you songs and so forth. So I got to make this. I got to make this announcement. So I am. I just got confirmation of this this morning. Kind of knew it yesterday, but I hadn't had it totally confirmed yet. So next Tuesday, which is November 30th, joining us here in studio, Mr. Zach Whedon.
Oh! Yay!
All right, that's...
That's what you're going for with the people.
Yeah, but now I just think she's faking it. Now I think it's not even real.
Oh, you know that I'm enough of a Whedon geek that I mean that.
So Mr. Zach Whedon, who of course is brother of Joss Whedon and a sterling author in his own right. So he was the co-creator, co-author of Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog. He is also one of the writers. He may be the sole writer, but now he's at least a co-writer on the new Firefly graphic novel. It's Shepherd's Tale.
The Shepherd's Tale, yeah. He wrote it with Joss. They both wrote it together.
So Joss and Zach Whedon, who created Shepherd's Tale, and he's going to be here on Tuesday because they're going to be doing it. I mean, it really is just like a whole festival of events. And you actually can talk probably more about that than I can, but I know that it's Things from Another World, Dark Horse Comics, PDX, Brown Coats. There's going to be several things. First of all, a screening of the Firefly episode Objects in Space, which is the finale of the TV run. It's episode 14, I think. Object in Space is going to be screening on the big screen at the Hollywood Theater, 6:30 p.m. And there's going to be a Q&A with Zach Whedon afterward. And then he's going to be at Things from Another World, is he not?
Yeah, at 6:30 they're going to show Object in Space at the Hollywood. Immediately following that, they're going to do a Q&A. If you can't make it, they're actually going to have a live Skype camera running at the same time. So if you can't make it, you can actually Skype into the Q&A. And then 8:30 at the Hollywood Things from Another World, there is going to be a just hanging out with Zach Whedon and a signing with Zach Whedon and the artist of Shepherd's Tale, Chris Somney, who is from Portland. Portland artist Chris Somney was the penciler on the Shepherd's Tale. He is also going to be at the signing. And Things from Our World is providing free beer and food also at the event.
Nice.
At the store.
So you can find out more about that by going to TFAW.com, Things from Another World, TFAW.com. Whatever you're into, they have just the thing for your collection. So Zach Whedon, more importantly and most importantly to Dawn, will be here sitting in this very chair.
Yeah, my chair that I brought into the studio.
That'll be Tuesday at 1:30. And he also, you know what I did not know? I didn't know he wrote an episode of Deadwood. So in addition to Dr. Horrible and Rubicon, and I know he's written for Fringe as well. And he's done not just the Serenity of the Shepherd's Tale book. He's also done the Terminator thing.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool news miniseries from Dark Horse called Terminator 1984. And it's based, I guess, on some notes that Cameron made back in the 80s when he was making the original Terminator. That actually, in his script notes, there was a second person that went back in time with Kyle Reese and pretty much ran parallel with him. And his whole job was to keep an eye on the early beginnings of Skynet. So this one that Zach Whedon wrote called Terminator 1984 is all about that guy who knew that Kyle Reese was going to be killed and
Fantastic.
Wasn't allowed to intervene.
Mm. Excellent. So that will be coming up. Tell your friends. Tell your friends. Tuesday, 1:30 p.m. Pacific time right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Mr. Zach Whedon here in studio.
You going to wear your Captain Hammer shirt?
Feel a little bit happier than you did just a few moments ago, Don?
I do. I do.
Excellent. Do you own a Captain Hammer shirt?
No.
Want one?
Do you?
He says, inserting a plug.
So someone could get a Captain Hammer shirt. Where would they get that if they wanted one?
I think maybe if you go to the store that I manage, which is at 4133 Northeast Sandy Boulevard, you can get a Captain Hammer shirt.
Nice.
If you had that, would you wear it that day?
No.
Okay.
What about an Evil League of Evil?
I just want to see...
Are you going to have him sign something?
Probably not.
Are you not a signer? Do you not ask for autographs?
No.
See, I'm unashamed about that. I have no problem asking people to
sign
stuff.
You have Ozzy's gum.
That's right. You know, but it's only because you're not able to sign the gum, or else there's really no pen that writes on gum. Or otherwise, I would have had that taken care of. You know, the gum is unadorned with a signature because it's not physically feasible. But
I think it would depend on the person. I haven't asked for anybody's autograph in a very long time. As an adult, I've only ever asked for people's autographs for other people. Like, I went to a comic book science fiction thing, and Robert Englund was there. And after he fielded, like, a zillion questions, mostly about V, I thought that most people would be asking him Nightmare on Elm Street, but no, there were a gazillion geek questions about V. So when you were in the ship and you were... Oh, Jesus. But I had gotten in the dealer's room, I had gotten a 8x10 of Freddy Krueger, and I brought it up to him, and I had him to sign it, and I asked him if he would write it, because it was to my stepbrother. And I said, would you write on it, Andy, 1-2, I'm coming for you. And he kind of just did a take and looked at me and went, okay. And my stepbrother was just, like, delighted. So,
do you ever do this thing when you meet somebody who's, you know, they've done some amount of acting, or they've, you know, they're a performer in some field, that you try to be the guy who can quote the project that no one else ever brings up? You know, where you try to, like, go, hey, I loved you in. And then you go to the thing. Maybe they're proud of it. Maybe they're not. But it's like the film they made that they probably never get asked about, that by definition they like to be asked about because it's just not more Nightmare on Elm Street questions. Oregon, you know, whatever. Because I guess it doesn't surprise. Wait, was it like a convention of some sort?
It was in L.A. and it was in L.A. It was there used to be a monthly science fiction comic book thing at a big hotel in Los Angeles, and
it doesn't surprise me. But I mean, you know, he probably gets asked so much in most venues about the Freddy Krueger stuff that to be asked about V was a little bit of a refreshing change. It's like when I talked to. I attempted to interview Adam West one time, and that didn't really work out because he couldn't hear me. And so it was just me shouting into the phone and then him going, I can't hear him. And then he hung up. I had intended to go, like, tell me about Maxim Zool, just so I could be the only guy he was talking to that week, probably asking about Maxim Zool. Not unlike with Roddy Piper, where I mentioned Hell Comes to Frogtown. And it was like, and he was like, dude, brother, you're taking me back. No one asked about Hell Comes to Frogtown. And in that moment, Rick Emerson distinguished himself.
Yeah.
Aaron Duran?
When I met Edward James Olmos, it was at the height of Battlestar, and all I wanted to talk to him about was American Me.
Dude,
I knew he was surrounded by Battlestar fans.
Awesome.
And I actually woke up and just started speaking to him in Spanish because I was trying to avoid the $80 signature. So I was actually complimenting.
Were you going to just, like, pretend you couldn't read the sign? That
because here's what I came with him with. I came with him thanking him for protesting all the demolition work the Navy was doing in Puerto Rico.
Uh-huh.
Or not in Puerto Rico. In Puerto Rico. And he instantly clicked with me and, like, pushed all the fanboys aside. And then we talked about American Me for, like, 5 minutes.
Seriously, for a minute, I thought you were just like, I don't want to pay. I'll just pretend that I'll pretend that I can't read.
Well, when I was at a convention in Seattle, and it was the first science fiction convention I ever went to, and Neil Gaiman was the guest of honor. And there was a line of people getting stuff signed, and it was all Sandman geeks.
Like, God, don't talk about Sandman
anymore. Yeah, and I had him sign my copy of Good Omens. And
well done.
He actually stood there and talked to me for about 10 minutes about Good Omens, because everybody else in line were Sandman kids.
I did the same thing when I met Linda Blair, because she was charging like $60 a signature.
Was that a movie Madness?
No, this is also at Dragon Con. This was the same magical weekend at Dragon Con.
Is there any other kind of weekend at Dragon Con,
Dragon
really?
Dragon Con is fantastic.
Uh-huh.
The most debaucherous dork weekend you will ever experience.
Okay.
But she does all these animal rescues. So, same thing. I did a total indoor. And I actually cut through the line and just thanked her for all the work she does with rescue animals. Because as one who takes care of a retired greyhound, I understand, her love of animals. Another thing, like 10 minutes, just hanging out, chatting with her. Got a free signature. And I left a little bit to help the animals.
Did she look all leathery when you saw her?
Yeah, leathery and mean.
Yeah, just just sort of bony and unpleasant.
Yeah,
and
she
did. Like somebody left her underneath one of those heating lamps at a McDonald's for several weeks. When I saw Linda Blair, I didn't really get a chance to talk to her. I just sort of walked by. I walked by the table because they were charging to talk to her, of course. And, she was charging. I mean, it was like some absurd amount. It was like it was like $35 or something.
Yeah, nuts.
To stand in line to have her autograph a book, which you had to purchase, like, separately.
Yeah.
Like, she had, some, and it was a cookbook, I think. I think it was actually a book of vegan recipes because she's a vegan, because she's some animal rights nutcase. And so she's, so she has some recipe book that she was hawking at Movie Madness. And you had to buy the book from one guy, and then you had to stand in line to have her sign it, which was like an additional $35.
That's crazy.
And so instead, I was like, well, F that. So I just, I just pretended that I was looking at like the... I don't know. I pretended that I was looking at, like, the AbFab box set or something like that in the TV section just so I could leer at her. And then I realized that there was just nothing to leer at. I mean, she was just, she was really unappealing in, like,
every way. She's not the Unchained Heat Linda Blair anymore.
She's not even the Linda Blair to the Heretic no. Linda Blair anymore. Or the dating, or the great, was it Greg Kinn that she dated?
Well, I remember in her early days, she followed the super freak guy around.
Rick James.
She followed him.
I don't know that that's like from tour, on his tour. Exclusive club or anything. I think that was probably a time in American history and a time in Rick James' career when he could just turn on the television and just go, ooh, I want one of those.
Yeah.
And just, hey, Jeff, go get me one of those. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program brought to you in part by Sorrell's Vintages. You can find them at 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. 3713 Southeast Hawthorne, right across from the Baghdad Theater, right next to Powell's Books. Sorrell's Vintages has been in business since 1990, and they have a fantastic, really, and I mean this honestly, just a truly fantastic collection of mid-century modern American furniture. And it really is, you know, what we would typically call the Mad Men or the Atomic Age stuff. It is fantastic. Right in the heart of Hawthorne. If you have never been there, you really owe it to yourself. I did probably close today, but I'm telling you, as you get closer to the holidays, you will not regret it. It's not typically what you think of when you think of a vintage store. A lot of times that's just code for like junk store or thrift store, you know, where it's just a bunch of people just come in and they just pawn a bunch of stuff off and everything is sort of dusty and grimy and it's packed and it's just, you know, and it's just everything from furniture to like, you know, to like a McDonald's glass from 7 years ago, and it all kind of gets put under this umbrella of vintage. It's not the case. You go to Sorrell's Vintages, it's a beautiful place, and they have a selection of, you know, everything from furniture to small decorative items. It's all real. It's all authentic. It's all from that period in American history and design. It really is. It's quite something. 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. I had something to say, but it's lost to me now. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. So coming up on Tuesday, Mr. Zach Whedon will be in the studio, so be listening for that. Just a short while, we'll be joined by David Walker, who will be sitting here in the studio. Aaron Duran is here. Let's pay a visit to the news desk with Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Before you get to the actual news, let me just ask you this question. So the spoon bread you were making.
Yeah.
Is spoon bread like... Is that like sweet bread where it's not really a bread at all? It's something else that you've masked with a different name?
It's somewhere between a pudding and a bread. It's like a bread product, but it's very soft. So you can't like slice it. You have to spoon it onto your plate. It's basically the one I made is a sweet potato spoon bread, one of Martha Stewart's fine recipes. And it's made with, you cook sweet potatoes, you mash them up, and then you make a batter basically with... milk and cream and eggs and there's sugar and spices.
I'd like
and
to try gets, some of that. Where could I find that?
Is that
in the kitchen?
On my dining room table where my husband left it when he was supposedly loading all the food into the car.
Ah, okay.
It's delicious.
Did he know that he was supposed to bring it?
Yes, he was. One of his jobs is he was moving the food from the dining room table to the car that we were taking with us.
Okay, all right.
And that somehow failed to...
Well, I'm sure it's good in theory.
And there's a lot of it, too. I had to, like, break out a 3-quart dish to get all of it in there. So there's a lot of it.
Okay.
Good thing your dog's not getting to it right now.
I'll bring you some tomorrow.
By the way, a couple of things somebody wants to note. I cannot believe you have not seen Home for the Holidays, Rick. It's one of the best holiday movies ever. Somebody wants to know if the Swashbucklers Ball was actually a success for the Pirate Festival, because the deal was, so if you didn't hear this, so they had the Pirate Festival, but it was raining earlier this year, which means the grass got kind of torn up, which is the sort of thing the city should anticipate in Portland, but they tried to hit the pirate guys for the reseeding and replanting cost of the lawn anyway, which is several $1,000, and that's what this was to benefit. So what did, was it, do they know, you know, if it came anywhere close to doing
I do believe
it
sold out, so it was a rousing success. Yes,
okay.
It was very good.
So
all signs point to there will be a pirate festival this in 2011.
So, awesome. Yeah. Let's see. Rick says, every Thanksgiving I worked in healthcare, we'd have your show going. This is the first year I'm not listening to Rick Emerson's show, my healthcare job, because I quit that job. I now sit and I make art for a living, still listening on Thanksgiving. You are appreciated, Rick and Dawn, and assorted myriad guests. Thank you so much.
Oh, that's very sweet.
And finally, this is just the best thing, and then we'll get to the news. This is the best message I've gotten today. It says... I won't give this guy's name in case his relatives are listening. He says, sweet, I can listen live today. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours, Rick, Dawn, and guests. Mad love. And then about like 2 minutes later, he says, God damn, my family won't shut up so I can listen. Switching to soundproof headphones now. Well done, sir. This is the problem with having families. They always want to interact with you.
Stupid families.
Here is Don Taylor.
A planned boycott of airport security scanners was a bust, but holiday travelers in the western U.S. had to contend with a chaotic mess of snow, sleet, and ice. The powerful storm system closed roads and delayed flights from Anchorage to Salt Lake City and promised to bring messy, wintry weather to much of the Dakotas today. Freezing rain glazed roads across the Midwest, and at least three traffic deaths in Iowa were blamed on the weather. National Weather Center meteorologist Frank Pereira says that the storm will bring snow showers and a slick mix of rain and snow today.
We're currently looking at winter weather advisories and winter storm warnings for the extreme north central U.S. from eastern Montana to northern Wisconsin and Michigan.
Well, I guess it was Utah. They were saying that it was like they were hunkering down for some weird like 15-hour snow,
yeah.
You know, some huge blizzard, just some total snow fest that was coming in like they don't typically get there.
Pereira said travel could also be hazardous further east
across portions of the interior northeast, upstate New York, northern New England. We could see some icy spots today.
You know, I'm not trying to diminish the impact of this because we got a lot of listeners, you know, kind of scattered across the country. But it seems like with New York, especially, we get this story every year.
Yeah.
That it's, you know, like the worst winter in the history. And I wonder if to some degree that's just New Yorkers who think that everything that happens to them is like way more special than anything that happens to anybody else anywhere else in the world.
I have no idea. I mean, I don't know. It does seem to be exceptionally cold, though, for this time of year. I mean, we usually don't get this. It doesn't get this cold and this awful before Thanksgiving.
It was actually record-breaking. It was a record-breaking cold snap on Tuesday.
Yes.
I'm trying to replicate that woman from California. What the F did she say? It doesn't normally get this record-breakingly cold. What the hell did that woman say in California when it was so hot?
Yeah, I know. It was a record-breaking heat wave. And she's like, yeah, it usually doesn't get this hot in September.
Yeah.
And you're going, yes, that's why it's record-breaking.
I'm failing.
So there weren't very many protesters doing the national opt-out campaign, although apparently there was one man walking around Salt Lake City Airport in a Speedo.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pereira says that in other parts of the nation, Thanksgiving Day travelers are going to need their windshield wipers.
We're expecting heavy rains today from portions of the mid-Mississippi Valley, especially we're looking at Missouri, southern Illinois, up into the Ohio Valley.
Here's the thing about that, the traveling, by the way, and the opting out, is I wonder, you know, it's not like I'm a guy who sees conspiracies or anything, but I would, it is to their benefit to downplay it, right? I mean, it's like they don't want to just, even if it was a big success, they probably wouldn't say that because
right.
You don't want to tip off the average American idiot that he has the, you know, that he has the power to sort of louse things up, right?
Yeah, that he has any power to to make any kind of an impact whatsoever.
I mean, yeah, because, you know, you just want the guy to go, well, I guess that didn't work. I will never protest anything again. I guess
right.
I will just, you know, and it's like, and then the ring is placed through the nose. So I would imagine that even if it were successful, they would probably speak in such a way as to diminish the perceived impact of that. I will say that I was looking online last night. It was on Drudge. He'd linked to one of those Insta sites that had sprung up to kind of track the opt-out thing. And they were having people snap cell phone, pictures, just saying, like, you know, what is it like at the airport where you're traveling? And they showed an astonishing number of – first of all, there was a complete list of the airports that had the backscatter thing. But there were an astonishing number of airports where the backscatter thing was actually just closed, where they had put up, like, cones and, you know, whatever it is – not row. But, you know, like the – they cordoned it off so that you couldn't go through, which to me, that's like one on the win column. Because that actually indicates that, however, in other words, that the opt-out thing may have been ineffective only because nobody really did it, because they didn't have the choice, because they weren't asked to go through the backscatter thing in the first place. That airports were sort of cutting the Gordian knot. They were just skipping the entire thing by saying, well, we're not even going to give you the choice today. We're just going to give you the X-ray and the padding, and you won't be given the choice of the body scan thing. Therefore, we can say that nobody is shutting it down.
I think really what happened, though, is that people like the idea of protesting and fighting the man in theory.
On message boards?
But if it is actually going to inconvenience them in any way for even 5 minutes, then no.
Yeah.
No. I got places to be. I got to fly to Atlanta. I'm not going to stand up to the man. I hope someone else does, though, because that would be awesome.
It'd be like in the... It's one of those things where I'm flying, I guess, so it's the 11th of December, and then I'm coming back the 13th. And Salt Lake, I found it, and you said that Eric Snyder had told you this, and I looked it up last night, and sure enough, it is true. They have the backscatter thing there. Mm-hmm. So I'm figuring I'm going to do two. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to have the opt-out thing. I'm going to ask them not to do it. I'm going to ask them to give me the groping and the fondling and the whatever, just because I want to know that experience for myself. You know why? Because having had it done, I can then be one of those guys who smugly lectures other people about it, you know?
It's the same. Plus, hey, free groping.
Seriously. You know, and it's like that's a thing. It's in short supply sometimes. It's the same reason I applied to be a witness at an execution some time ago, and it didn't happen, but because I wanted to be able to even more smugly be able to be, like, comfortable in my liberal anti-capital punishment ensconcement, you know, where I can just say, well, look, as someone who's seen an execution, just like now I can say, look, as a small business owner, you don't know what you're talking about. You know, it's just, I like anything just makes my opinion even more unimpeachable. But so I'm going to get the groping, and then I'm going to do the dual layer of clothing. I'm going to have the now I have a machine gun ho 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 sweatshirt from.
Hey, I approve of that sweatshirt.
GeekintheCity.com from Die Hard, and then I'm going to wear the Turkish flag shirt underneath it. So it's just a whole.
You should get a pair of cutoffs too and go as a never nude.
I'm just saying it's you know I get I'm approaching it on three fronts simultaneously. It's going to be awesome.
And you should wear a cup, so when they do grope you, they do feel something hard, but then you have to explain to them that I always wear a supporter.
Or what if I just made like shutters of pleasure? You know, what if it's sort
just
of you
squeak
know.
A, ooh.
Just giggle coquettishly as they're cupping my junk.
Just look down and quietly say, I love you.
There's Todd Taylor. Don't ever say that.
Healthier giant Johnson & Johnson is announcing another product recall, this one involving children's Benadryl Allergy Fast Melt Tablets, Junior Strength Motrin Caplets, and Extra Strength Rolaids Soft Chews.
I love the idea that they have the Fast Melt Tablets for children, because what you definitely want is a tablet that dissolves so quickly you don't have a chance to get it out of their mouth if they've taken a fistful accidentally. Make sure that they are like in the bloodstream within half a second.
The New Brunswick, New Jersey company said its latest recall is at the wholesale and retail level, but the medicine still work and consumers can still use them. It added that no action is required by consumers or providers. It said it issued the recall after reviewing its manufacturing process in the wake of a series of product recalls over the last year. They said they found unspecified problems related to Benadryl and Motrin products. The Rolaids soft chews were recalled because some consumers complained the Rolaids had an unusual texture that Johnson & Johnson traced to crystallized sugar. So, yeah, the company recalled 4 million packages of cherry and grape Benadryl Fast Melt tablets, 800,000 Motrin caplets, and 71,000 caplets of extra strength Rolaids.
It's always nice when there's an unspecified problem. That means that.
And when they say, but you can still use them. It's okay. I mean, you know, we're pulling them from the manufacturer.
Don't just fall asleep a lot faster.
If you've got them,
fine.
Go ahead and just take them.
That means one of two things. Either it's doing something, they don't know the result, but they know that something bad went into them, or it's having an effect that they don't want you to know about, like it's melting your bones or something. And they just you know, go a light on the details, Bob. Just say to return it to the store. We'll do one more here. We'll take a break. We got Mr. David Walker is going to join us on the other side. We'll have another. Before you go, by the way, I know you got to take off and go do some things here in a bit. But before you leave, so we'll take a break here in a second. On the other side, you got to drink. Have you had any of the Slayer Dark Ale?
I love Slayer Ale.
Really? Have you? So you've actually tried it before?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Right,
it's from Ninkasi. They're out of Eugene, so they're even local.
Because we could pop one of those open right now.
I'm just saying. I got the.
And there's turkey out there.
I don't know if I could finish it, but I would, yeah.
I'll drink a little bit of that.
It's a large bottle, but Dawn started drinking early, so she needs to diversify. She's at the point of the day where you don't just want to be doing the one booze. You want to be alternating.
And since you are missing your spoon bread, the Slayer is. It is kind of like drinking drinking some bread. So
beer is food.
You have to dull the pain of your husband's culinary failure.
That's right.
All right, here's Don Taylor.
Let's do that penis watch.
Here's your penis watch for. Let's see, where did my watches go? One moment here. There's actually so much sound happening today that it can't even be kept on the screen at the same time. Hold on one moment. I'm failing. There we go. Sorry. Thank you. Thanks so much. I appreciate that. Now, I opened every. I actually have. Usually there is one news soundboard in front of me, but today there's actually so much news. I have three different soundboards of news. All right, here's your penis watch for Thanksgiving right here on the Rick Emerson Radio program.
Take a look at my enormous penis. And my troubles start a melting away. Bow, bow, I take bow, a look at my enormous penis. And everything. everything is going my way.
Here is Dante there with your Penis Watch Holiday Edition.
I just looked across the room to see David Walker smiling and pointing at his penis. Happy Thanksgiving. A woman who was flashed while riding the New York subway didn't just stand there and take it. No, she got angry. She was unidentified until this morning, and I don't have her name on this thing. She actually finally did a news interview in New York this morning, so I don't actually have her name. But she was on the subway. 51-year-old Mario Valdivia stood next to her, and very close, and pulled his penis out while they were on
this
the subway.
In New York?
In New York.
Okay.
And instead of, you know, being embarrassed by it or shrinking away from him or doing what women often do when something like this, she instead got very, very angry. She was also surrounded by people who had phones with video cameras. And so what she started yelling at him was captured by onlookers and posted to YouTube.
So we'll play the audio here in a second. So she's standing on the subway. The guy is standing next to her. And then he presumably jostles or bumps her, sort of like a hey, look at this kind of a thing.
Yeah, he's standing very close to her. She looks down. He has his penis out. And what happened after what you're about to hear is her yelling at him. What happened was, though, she started yelling at him. People gathered around to see what was going on, started videotaping it with their phones. And with the help of several men on the subway, she detained him until the police could arrive and arrest him.
Awesome. All right. So here is here's the audio of that. This is her confronting the guy who was doing the penis waggling on the subway.
Yeah, I'm serious.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, why is this person keep pressing up against me? And I realize that you have all this space here, and I sneak his penis out. That's it.
Hey,
I'm not leaving your side. My plans are done for tonight. I'm escorting you to the police station, okay? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I know what I saw. Where the is the conductor?
Oh, this shit's going on YouTube, yeah.
Where is the conductor?
Okay, we'll take you to the penis
at the condo. Oh, it's there. It's there, all right.
Penis at the condo.
You ridiculous, man, because I...
That's awesome. That's fantastic.
Emily May, who posted the video to her website, ihollaback.org, an organization against street harassment, told CBS in New York, she's my hero. So many women have walked away from situations like that feeling like their voice didn't matter, and she spoke up. And her voice is a voice for an entire city of women, many of which have seen like this in their own lives.
I'm sorry, but is this, I mean, you probably don't want it. It's not how you want to start your day, but is this like, is there an epidemic of penis waggling happening on subways? Is this a thing that I wasn't privy to?
It's apparently not uncommon.
I wouldn't think there'd be room. I mean, unless you were a man of insubstantial girth and length, I would think that you wouldn't really have the, just spatially, I would think you wouldn't really be able to do a lot of,
apparently, look at this. Apparently the standing very close and rubbing up against a woman thing is also extremely common
on man.
Subways.
A friend of mine who lived in Japan for a while, and she said it was like, every day she would just like have, it was like girding herself mentally to go into battle because you would get onto a subway, you know, and you think of the Japanese culture being very reserved. And apparently that's the case as long as you're sort of making a lot of eye contact and there's an ability to foist public shame onto somebody. But when you're just lost in a sea of humanity on the subway where it's so crowded, nobody can tell what hands are connected to what face. It's a whole different game. And the game is let me jam my hands and my penis up against you while we're on the subway. Because that's the place where it's like it is so crowded that those guys are outside with those broom things, like shoving people into the subway so the doors can close. And she said that sometimes – this is so creepy. She said that sometimes she would be on the subway and she would feel three hands on her, which indicates that there's more than one guy at least. I mean, and quite possibly three guys just like simultaneously getting their feel on with her while she's just trying to get downtown to like, you know, to go to work or something.
Well, this guy apparently has a history of sexual misconduct. He's being deported. Turns out he's not an American citizen as well. And also one of the things I read in another story is that apparently he intended to enjoy himself to completion. He was wearing a condom.
Wow. Okay. You know, here's the thing I wonder, though. You got to ask yourself what with, everybody having the phone, everything gets directly. Like the guy just goes, oh, this is going on YouTube, yo. If that's going to give rise to some whole new breed of exhibitionist who actually doesn't just want to be seen by the way. I mean, why be seen by one set of eyes? Why shock one person when you could be seen by like 40,000 people, you know, by lunchtime? Guys who their whole thing is they want the act to be captured so they can then, wave their business at an entire horrified nation. All right, there's your penis watch. We'll take a break. We'll come back on the other side. We will talk for a bit to Aaron Durham before he takes off. Mr. David Walker going to join us here in the studio here in just a second and so forth. We got your top five coming up later on. We got your top five thank you songs. Also a job watch coming up, yes?
Yes.
Job watch on the way as well. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program, the Thanksgiving edition.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Excellent. Hey, what did you say to... So you spoke Spanish to Edward James Olmos.
Yeah.
What did you say?
I don't remember. I had to practice it because I'm actually not very good at Spanish.
Really?
So I need something like...
So you were at home just sort of like with your Berlitz book? Just
I did.
You know.
Actually, Sarah from Puerto Rico, she's the one who... She tutored me on what to say when I ran into Edward James Olmos. And hoping he didn't sway too much from the prepared script. Otherwise, I'd have been in trouble.
There should totally be a whole. There should totally be a phrase book, you know, for like what to do if you meet, you know, if you meet celebrities, you know, who are versed in another tongue,
yeah.
like an Edward James Olmos, like one of those laminated cards the Canadians always seem to have in Vegas that tells them when to double down. You know what I mean? Or like when you want to split or something, and you just, you know, and you just take it out in the Mr. Olmos, and then it would be a series of.
Antonio Banderas, here are things that you could say.
Exactly. You know, so you just, yeah, so you could say, you know, Mr. And then it's a series of compliments or perhaps, you know, a question about how much it will cost to have him autograph or something.
Yeah, I mean, the problem I ran into is that we were getting into, like, heavy political conversation. It's like, oh, man, if we move beyond bomb or Navy, I'm in trouble.
Well done on the American Me reference. So, yeah, I would either do that or I would go with second season West Wing.
Oh, yeah. He was, American Me, though, got some serious shivving.
Seriously, and a troweling at one point. Let's not
forget
that.
That's a good little flick, man. It's mean, but
I have a by the way, I have a box at home. It's a some kind of elaborate nutcracker from the 70s that was sold on television, and it shows like a happy family on the front, like, you know, cracking nuts with their elaborate nutcracker. It's one of these things, like, apparently you wind it back and then you let go and it snaps and it breaks. And the only reason I own it, I found it in a secondhand store, and I turned it on the back, and I swear to God, on the back of the box, the people sitting around the living room enjoying their fine cracked nuts, wearing like the finest in polyester garb, is Edward James Olmos.
Are you kidding me?
A mid-70s awesome. Edward James Olmos with a great big mustache on the back of his nutcracker box. And that's the only reason I own it.
Awesome.
I should bring it in and show it to
this
you.
Is like that,
this is what I want you to put your walnuts in.
This is like when you, it's like that, it's like that Charmin commercial from the 70s that has Adam Savage from Mythbusters in it. Have you seen that?
No.
With Mr.
Yeah.
Whipple, there's a Don't Squeeze the Charmin commercial from like 76, 77. And Adam Savage is the, he's like the stock boy at the supermarket.
So and I think they've shown that before too.
Probably. I think they did on an episode where they were literally flinging poo into a fan.
It's so like Mike Rowe is on early QFC shows.
If
like
I ever get a chance to meet Edward James Olmos, though, I'm bringing that nutcracker box and I'm just going to show it to him and go, okay, just once and for all, is this actually you?
Oh, yes,
because I swear to God, this is you.
These ruminations on nothing in particular are brought to you by Castalia Language Center. Find out more about Castalia Language Center by going to PortlandSpanish.com. Don't be caught off guard if you were speaking to Edward James Olmos or Antonio Banderas or... Where did you make it three? There's got to be a third one.
Jimmy Smits.
Jimmy Smits. Well done.
Thank
Look
you.
At you, player. All right. So, you know, you want to be able to speak fluently and loquaciously to Mr. Smits. You can find out more by going to PortlandSpanish.com, Castalia Language Center. They offer Spanish language classes for adults and in class sizes of no more than how many people, Don Taylor?
Ocho.
That's right. So you're going to get near individualized attention, and it's, you know, it's based on conversation and actual, you know, like a quasi-immersion program. So you're going to speak it conversationally, and you'll be able to sound... impressive and butter smooth with your diction and your language and your speaking and your talkifying. I have completely forgotten how to speak myself today in English, even.
Es muy bueno, Señor Emerson.
Here's the thing. I think maybe I ought to be drinking. I think that might actually balance things out a bit. PortlandSpanish.com. Please tell me you heard it right here on the Rick Emerson radio program, Castalia Language Center.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for... Stop that. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's the Thanksgiving edition. It is Thursday, November 25th, 2010. Hello, Don Taylor. How are you?
I'm delightful.
What you got over there?
I have a little turkey. I have some of this delicious Kalamata olive bread. And I have some of the cranberry and red wine and pomegranate sauce that I made.
So Aaron Duran is here. We'll talk to him in just a moment. How's that Slayer Ale treating you? Okay. David Walker joined us here in just a second, and we have another special guest that we are going to bring into the program who's brought us something delectable here in just one moment. I got to say this. So this morning when I texted you from Fred Meyer, and I was like, what? Because I asked you what to bring, and you said, yeah. Said, well, you know, find some, you know, bread or, you know, bread-like substance.
Yes, sure.
And I said, fine. So I texted you from Fred Meyer, and I said, do you have a preference for bread? You know, what kind of bread should I bring? And you said, it doesn't matter. I don't care.
Yeah.
I can reveal this now, that I was almost certain that I was being tested, that you were waiting to see, that you were either waiting to see if I knew what kind of bread to get, like I would just sort of know it, or you were waiting to see if I would buy something ludicrous.
Well, it was like 8:30 in the morning, and I was sitting there, I just started work, and I get this text going, what kind of bread do you want? I was like, and the thing is, whenever I think about Thanksgiving and holiday stuff, it's like the bread choices are usually horrible. People usually bring like the crappy rolls and you know, the little brown and serve rolls and stuff, which I don't like. And so bread is honestly my least, you know, is the bottom of my priority when it comes to any kind of holiday food. So when you said bread, I just wasn't even thinking like good bread. I just went, I don't care.
I wasn't going to bring rolls. You know, here's the thing about rolls is they're really, really good. But at the same time, sometimes I have the presence of mind to know that they're good. They're terrible for you. And also they're good in a way that makes you get about three into those. And it's just they turn on you a little bit because they're all, you know, they're very squashy and they're sort of a white bread kind of a thing. This, though. As an American, I am a big fan of things that contain other things. So this is a bread that is this Kalamata bread, and it's filled with olives.
And this is the one from Grand Central Baking, I think.
Yes, it
which is actually my favorite Kalamata olive bread. So this, you chose well. This is one of my favorite breads.
There
actually,
that's what I do. So welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. Our good friend, Mr. Big Jim Willig. Hello, sir.
Hello. How are you?
I am fantastic.
Happy Thanksgiving to you guys.
Thank you for coming. So this is an unexpected delight. I didn't know that you were going to be coming by. I think I'd let you know about this, but
know you have a you're stopping here on your way to somebody on your way to somewhere else because you got lots going on today.
Absolutely.
So yeah. I didn't know if we were going to be graced by your presence or not. So you have not only is stopped by to the you know to give us your warm holiday tidings. You've brought us a thing. You brought us an edible thing.
Well, yeah, dessert obviously a very important part of Thanksgiving. It's kind of the capper, the cigarette after sex for the purposes of a good shared meal. So last night my girlfriend and I, Malia, she and I sat up and made arugula till the wee small hours, and actually we had so much left to make, we were just going to make the rest of it today. Finished up the rest of the batch, and our friend Rick, whose house we're going over to now, he had suggested that you are a fanatic for arugula. You love some arugula?
It's not that I'm a fanatic. It's just one of those things. I mean, I like it a lot, but the thing, arugula, not arugula, which is a cheese, correct?
No, it's a leafy.
It's a leafy vegetable.
Damn, I never. Okay, but this is arugula, which is a it's a pastry, but it's a little rolled thing. I think is what it means. But it's just a thing that, you know, it's not like I'm some like you know authority on foods of the world or whatever. But it's a thing you can get like in New York, you know, or places that have a larger substantial Jewish population, and it's really 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 good. You can get it elsewhere, and it sort of bears a passing resemblance to that. But sometimes it's a little hit or miss. So it's just a thing that you know you don't have good arugula very often. So.
Absolutely, yeah. And this was this your recipe or yeah, this was my girlfriend's own personal
awesome.
Recipe. It's apricot.
I understand that it's still warm.
It's still warm from the oven as of about 25 half hour ago.
All right, you got to give Big Diddy Rick some of that. You just got to give me the hookup over here.
In a festive holiday box.
Yes.
Excellent.
See, the thing
with
is,
wrapping.
I get all the credit for this, and it's like I did the least amount of work.
Oh, it's picked up the box.
Oh, man, the box.
Not even that.
The box is warm. Yes. It's like in a hat
it
box
has
with
snowmen on it.
Oh wow!
Yes.
Oh wow! This.
Breathe it in.
Yeah. See, this is what I'm talking about. It's like you can just tell by looking at it sometimes if it's going to be good, because when they, you know, like you go to like a not even a bakery, but just like you know like a supermarket or something where they've just replicated something that is sort of you know that should
gelatinous,
be made by
yeah.
hand. It should be yeah. I mean, it, you know, it should be served to you. You know, it just
yeah. Like even at Whole Foods, they have like the little plastic containers and they have the little arugula in them, and you go, oh, well, this should be good. This is Whole Foods, and then you bring it home, you open it up, and you go,
And it's one of those, and I don't mean anything bad. No disrespect by this, but it's the thing you sometimes picture like a grandmother serving you, you know, where it's just like a wonderful sort of comforting sort of, here you go, would you like some arugula? All right, I'm going to have this one on the top right here. Aaron, you want to?
I'll never say no to this.
One
Fantastic.
Of them is laced with peyote. Let's see if they notice the difference.
Button. Who's got the button?
Oh, it'll be me. I just know it.
Oh,
wow.
Look
at this.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. That's some eating right there is what that is.
Oh, my God. That's delicious. Mm.
And again,
well done.
I'm getting the lion's share of the credit, and all I did was just like, yeah, that's a great idea.
Oh.
Let's go along with that.
Well done, Malia.
Yes, Malia.
Yeah. By the way,
Rick.
We got this message that says, hey, Aaron sounds totally sober. Is everything okay?
Yeah, everything's fine, but I got to drive in like 5 minutes.
All right.
Sorry.
Somebody says, Rick, dude, pleased to be celebrating at least my fifth Thanksgiving with the Rick Emerson Show. This time I'm not drunk. Please drink one for me. Don, you got that taken care of over there?
Oh, I'm taking care of that in
All
spades.
All right, that is Mike, black guy in Portland. several.
We replaced our Keelan then.
That's Aaron who said that. Rick Emerson didn't say that. Rick Emerson doesn't view all black people as being interchangeable. That was Aaron Duran who made that observation.
Oh, my God. That is among the best arugula I've ever had, actually.
You're looking
it's
at me
fantastic.
Like I'm going to back you up on that. Like, no.
I should say at least one more. We've got this. Says, Rick, thanks, as always, for being – this is why we do this, I say, speaking directly to my wife.
So you can get praise.
This is why there's somebody who says, yes. Thanks for always being alive on Thanksgiving, signed listener Butthash. There you go. Thank you. I don't do it so I can hear from guys named Butthash. It's just so, you know.
Senator Butthash?
The people who are not, people who have one of those, what do you call them? Like real jobs and stuff, and they're not able to listen live. So I know every Thanksgiving, you know, other holidays where people listen live, we're not always given the chance to do so. So it's what it's Rick Emerson Show gives. We give and we give. Aaron Duran, you got to take off here in a few. Geekinthecity.com, what is happening that people ought to know about?
What is happening right now at geekinthecity.com? Wow. Is my continual search to find a printer for a comic book. So people can follow the site and watch the now ongoing trials and tribulations.
Because I was going to ask about your comic. It's supposed to be out December 7th. Has that been pushed back?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, unfortunately. So, yeah, keep checking the website, geekinthecity.com, and we find out more. There's nothing more frustrating every day than to see the completed product and not being able to get it printed yet. It just sits there on the desktop, like, hello. read me. You know, so, yeah.
Okay, then. So you can follow the ongoing saga to the eventual publication
yes.
and massive success of Aaron Durant's comic, which yeah. is called?
La Brujia.
I knew that I would mangle that somehow. So you can find out about more about that at geekinthecity.com. Also, Things from Another World, this, and I'm drooling, the Things from Another World, this coming Tuesday, Zach Whedon, he's going to be in the studio.
Tuesday the 30th, yeah.
He's going to be in the studio here with us at 1:30.
He's going to be right in that chair.
Right in that chair.
Can I
Jim?
Stick the earphones after all's done?
You can, if you're good, you can lick them.
They'll be shiny.
Truly something to be thankful for.
And he'll be autographing copies of Serenity Preacher's
Shepherd's,
Tale.
The Shepherd's Tale.
Preacher's yep. Tale. I'm conflating the Preacher. Because yep. Preacher, he's a comic book character as well.
Yes.
Well, yeah, but really. So
different,
so
though.
Very different.
More Old West gun you down style.
More shoot you in the face. And,
all right.
You know,
and yeah. they're doing a screening of Objects in Space, which is episode 14 of... Now I'm becoming the shiny guy because I'm eating. Episode 14 of the original Firefly run will be screening at 6:30 at the Hollywood Theater.
It's all absolutely free, but it is a benefit for the Oregon Food Bank, so you have to bring a canned food or some non-perishable item. 6:30 at the Hollywood Theater, then 8:30 at the Hollywood Things from the World, where we'll also have beer and food.
Shiny.
Yeah.
All right. Actually, you can find out more about that by going to...
I got one, Hall.
TFAW.com, ThingsFromAnotherWorld.com, whatever you're into, they have just the thing for your collection. I should also note, by the way, speaking of Things from Another World, who are the marquee sponsor of Outlook Portland, wow, drop cloth, that Zach Whedon will also be on an upcoming episode of Outlook Portland, so you can be watching OutlookPortland.com for details. Aaron Durant, GeekInTheCity.com, Mr. Big Jim Willig, you can find out more about him by going to Facebook.com/Jim Willig, JimWillig. We'll have you in tomorrow as well to do another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. You will be focusing on the life and oeuvre of?
Joan Rivers.
Excellent. So that'll be tomorrow with Jim Willing. Excellent. All right. Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving. And Malia, thank you so much for the arugula.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Oh my God, it
really
is
quite wonderful. So excellent. Jim Willing and Aaron Durant, ladies and gentlefolk. At the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Well, Wednesday's so-called National Opt-Out Day allegedly failed to materialize at nation's airports. And we're just going to revisit this from the last show from Legion of News today because it's so awesome. Some passengers are still unhappy with the new enhanced security screenings, including this man at San Francisco Airport.
This, by the way, is fantastic. And in just a second, we're going to be joined by... I'm going to be joined by David Walker, so I'm actually going to hold off for just one second. I'm going to kill a little bit of time here. I didn't really think about the fact that he probably should be allowed to hear this.
Oh, yeah,
it is exactly the... And plus, it's really just an opportunity for... Wait a minute. Those Ruggler... They were just here. Now they're gone. Don't think Rick Emerson didn't see that.
They're being eaten in the hallway.
Okay. No,
never
thank
see
you.
Them
that's,
again.
That's so, yeah. Leave the gun. Take the... thank you. It's... yes. Hmm. I'm just being distracted by the side of the arugula can over there. It's the
watching you eat that. I swear it's probably the closest I will ever come to watching you have sex. Your eyes were rolling up in your head.
You had
this look of bliss
I'm
on your face
you,
that I've never seen before.
It's quite a satisfying thing. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. By the way, this is why we only do this kind of show like once or twice a year, because I've already lost the power of speech and I'm stone sober and I've only been here for like 2 hours. So, you know, you fast forward a couple hours into the afternoon and things are just really, it's like a program hosted by Visigoths. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson radio program, Mr. David Walker of BadassMofo.com. You can also hear him on the Court and Fat Boy show every weekday. Every week Thursdays, right? I'm sorry, hold on a second. That's my fault. Go ahead there.
I'm on Tuesdays.
Tuesdays. Wait a minute. I thought you were on Thursday because you followed Courtney Hameister, who you referred to as being more wrong about everything than any human being you have ever met in your life.
I will never follow Courtney Hameister.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've stepped
into... She follows
into...
me.
Okay. I didn't realize I'd entered into a whole thing there.
That's okay. That's okay. No, I'm Tuesdays. She's Wednesdays. You can remember that by Tuesdays is terrific and Wednesdays is wrong.
Awesome.
So there you go.
Excellent. How's life, my friend? How are things?
Life is good. Life is good. You were talking about Edward James Olmos earlier, and then I wanted to chime in that if you ever get a job working for the United States Post Office, they have a training video starring Edward James Olmos that was made like in 1983 or 4, where he's playing his character from Miami Vice.
Really?
Yeah, in character.
Santiago, I believe.
I can't remember the character's yes. name, but it's all about mail fraud, and it's a pretty interesting video. And so Edward James Olmos in this sort of like pastel business jacket and the bad hairstyle, and he's talking like this because he On that show, he never moved his jaw.
You know, you do have to give it up for that guy becoming, you know, in spite of having an unconventional facial structure and appearance, you know, for really making it in Hollywood and becoming a, you know, just through the strength of his presence and gravitas and, you know, his really sizable amount of acting ability that he's got. I mean, he really is a, you know, he's a great talent, but, you know, he doesn't look like your typical leading man.
No, he doesn't. But he's actually been in some very interesting films over the years, like before people knew who he was. I mean, you know, he was in Blade Runner before anyone knew who he was. You go back, you watch him in that. And my favorite film with him is a Western called The Ballad of Gregorio Cortez, which is based on, I believe, a true story. It's sort of an unconventional Western from like 81 or 82. I don't even know if it's on DVD or not. But
And then he, I don't know if it was before or after or during Miami Vice, he did Stand and Deliver. That was the thing that kind of put him into the mainstream, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was sort of the era of the super teacher film.
Yeah. The savior.
Well, it was Zoot Suit that really actually brought everyone's attention.
I'm not sure that I know that.
I was just getting ready to mention Zoot Suit, which I can't remember who made that, but it's actually a... It's an odd film because it's based on a play, which is based on the Zoot Suit Riots, and it's like a play enacted on film. So it's kind of surreal, but it's great.
Hold on. Just Jim Willig is in the studio just mouthing somebody at me. Yes?
Happy Thanksgiving, you guys.
Thank you. Okay.
Hi.
I appreciate it. I didn't know if that was
He's stealing David Walker's coat.
Didn't know if that was one of those things I was supposed to be.
I think he stuck it to steal someone's jacket.
Do you need to take the rest of those with you?
No.
Are you sure about that?
No, he doesn't.
I'll be back tomorrow for the empty carcass.
Just checking. Want to make sure I hadn't. Okay, good. All right. Yeah. I'd feel bad if I'd like guilted him into leaving those. I wouldn't feel that bad for that long. But if those Rogala had been intended for someone else, and then you know he was like, well, we'll drop a few off, and then if I had just somehow
eaten all of them,
or pressured him into leaving it behind, you know, if there was a grandmother going hungry somewhere, then I would have felt
really
bad.
You feel guilty about stuff like that?
No, but again, you know, just for like just for a token amount of time, and then I move on. You know, it's really
which makes you better than me.
It's just long enough that I can say that I've done it and that I could just proceed with my normal horrible behavior. So when did Zoot Suit come out? Because I don't think I've ever heard of it.
Zoot Suit, I'm going to say if it wasn't late 70s, it was early 80s.
I'd say probably about 76, maybe.
Okay. Well, you're the one with the laptop with the fancy internets on it.
I'll see what they say in the tubes.
But, you know, he's one of those guys I've never met, but I've always wanted to meet him if I could have an intelligent conversation with him, if I had something intelligent to say. Because there's nothing worse than when you meet, you know...
81,
okay. When you meet an actor and go, oh, I really loved you on Battlestar Galactica or something, I would reference Zoot Suit, and then he would, you know, he'd say, oh, mi amigo, yeah. So that's how I roll.
You're sort of he's the Pat Sajak to your Ed Grimley in this scenario. We were just talking to Aaron Duran about this because Aaron met him and Aaron, you know, busted out the Spanish. He had prepped for it, I think, in advance or something. And I labor under that, dude, not wanting to be – I live in shame that the one time the biggest fail I ever had in a celebrity meeting was when I met Ving Rhames is a bit of an overstatement, but I was in L.A. at a Tower Records, and he pulled up in a gold Escalade. Pulled up at a red light, and I was like, I'm on the sidewalk in front of the Tower Records, and I guess I was coming out, I bought something. He pulls up to the red light, and I look, and it's that thing, first of all, where you want to make sure that it's actually him.
Yeah.
Because, otherwise it's awkward in, like, multiple ways. So I recognized him, and I looked for a second, I kind of narrowed my eyes, I thought, okay, it is him. Now is the moment when I make my mark. Now is the moment when he says, what a fine, intelligent young lad that Rick Emerson is. So I just said, hey, you're Ving Rhames! And that was it. And he looked over, and he just kind of went, and did like the slow jerk of the head and then rolled on, and that was it. And it's like, I lived with that for days. For days, I would wake up in a cold sweat almost the middle of the night just thinking about what a colossal boob I was and just how I had no... It was like I had negative style. I had an inverse style.
Yeah, I had that. I had probably a worse moment than that with Meatloaf, of all people.
Please to explain.
It was 1988 or 89 because it was Who Framed Roger Rabbit. I was
that would have been like late 80s.
So I was sitting in the movie theater with my cousins and we were watching Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and this guy walked in and. I'm a Meatloaf fan, and I was like, I think that's Meatloaf over there. And I was like, I thought it was. Everyone else didn't think it was. And then after the movie, as we were walking out, he was walking out of the theater out at the same time, and I said, are you who I think you are? And he said, well, who do you think I am? And I said, oh, man, I'm just a big fan, and and keep rocking. And I actually gave him a thumbs up.
You gave him the thumbs up.
Keep rocking. Yeah. So that tops your Bing Rames thing.
But the great thing is like it became like a sort of a Zen master challenge. You know, are you who I think you are? Who do you think I am?
Yeah.
And then it became this big open ended white room of doubt in your head of like, I don't know what to do. Did you ever confirm that you knew he was Meatloaf?
No, I knew exactly, because by the way he said, well, who do you think I am? He had that sort of, you know. And this, the interesting thing is, and I take partial responsibility for this. This was before his big comeback,
right? Before Bad Out of Hell 2.
Bad Out of Hell 2. So I think it was my telling him to keep rocking that motivated him to record Bad Out of Hell 2. At least that's what I tell myself, you know, because I made such a fool of myself. But I mean, I knew it was him for a fact. But it was sort of like that was probably one of my
keep
first encounters
rocking
with random like celebrities. And I'm thinking, why would Meatloaf be here at Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Where did your brain come up with keep rocking?
I don't know. It was, you know, I was, in all fairness to myself, not that I deserve any fairness, I was probably like 18 at the time, so 18, 19 years old. So
he was telling everyone to keep rocking at that point.
It was just a customary sign-off.
But honestly, that was, I was in college at the time, and college is, you know, that's Meatloaf years. That's prime years. Bad Out of Hell is the album you listen to from about the time you're 13 till about the time you're 18 or 19, because it's all about, you know,
because your life is one Wagnerian epic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's all about raging hormones and Paradise by the Dashboard Light. So, yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. This
keep
is all
rocking,
true.
Rick. Well,
it's a constant state with me, sir.
Really only works with the thumbs up, too.
And it's like, and that you just gave like the toothiest grin, too. Sort of like I expected there to be like a little Colgate kind of a ting coming out of your mouth when you did that. I don't think I actually at one point started rehearsing, like I did the full on Aaron thing where I started rehearsing what I was going to say to certain people if I knew I was going to meet them. Like Sarah introduced me to Mike Ness of Social Distortion, and I knew it was coming too because we were going to go see them do like a little at a recording studio, like a little intimate gig for like 30 listeners or whatever. And like Sarah's like, "Do you want to go?" And I'm like, "Yes." And so I for like 5 or 10 minutes outside, I was doing the whole thing of like pacing and like accenting different words to see how it would sound, and then I pulled it off. You know, just flawlessly. And then I just basically ran. I just turned around. And I think he was going to, like, ask me some, because I thanked him for, I talked about this one album. I said, oh, thank you for making the Somewhere Between Heaven and Hell album. It was, you know, got me through a really difficult time. And, you know, and I just, you know, thanks for doing what you do or whatever. And I think he actually he went to say, like, well, you know, why, or tell me more about it. He opened his mouth to say something, but it's like, I was just like a little, like, I was like a roadrunner cloud in the air, just a psh, as I was gone to the car before I could screw it up somehow, because I just lived in fear that I would just, like, with the next thing out of my mouth, I would just mangle it. Let's go to the news desk and pay a visit to Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don.
Have you had
Taylor.
Have you had any of the Slayer ale so far?
I'm not a drinker, so no.
Really?
Yeah.
That surprises me. I think you'd be drinking early and often, and like constantly. How do you make it through the day or through life without
drinking? He's David Walker. If he started drinking, he would never stop.
Well, that's what I figured, you know.
And the world would just be that much more dangerous. I mean, you've got North Korea, you've got Iran, and, like, David Walker drinking is just a recipe for disaster.
No, so you're doing it for us, really.
That's right. I'm doing it for the children.
Thank you.
That's a fair point. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Well, now that David Walker is here, we can discuss our so-called National Opt-Out Day from yesterday, which allegedly failed to materialize. We played these sound clips last hour in Legion of News, and they were so delightful, we thought we would bring them back for the Rick Emerson listeners. First, we will hear a man at the San Francisco airport who is unhappy with the new enhanced security screenings.
Wands work perfect. I had no problem with that. But once they started, you know, they come to the pat down and they're feeling all up inside you and groping you, I just totally didn't like it. I feel violated.
I did the all up inside you. Yeah. Makes me wonder exactly. I mean, I would like to see what they actually do. I would like to see a filmed search that is truly representative of what they're doing. Because first we heard it was like the glove, and then it was just like a glove. They made it sound like the glove was just swishing around in your pants like a, you know, like a trout on a riverbank, just sort of flopping around aimlessly, just sort of looking for whatever might be there. Then it was that they were just tracing the gloved hand around like the curve of your, you know, the business, and then they were going to scan the glove for bomb-making residue or you know, whatever. And God only knows what those scans actually. I mean, Jesus, you know, God forbid you ever put one of those things under like a CSI lamp or something. I mean, it's like, who knows? And then we heard it's like they were looking under your unit, and then it was like you were looking behind your sack. And now this guy claims that they're feeling, quote, all up inside him. So maybe it depends on where you are.
His kidneys could be smuggling explosives.
Yeesh. All right.
I don't even know what to say to that.
No, it gets better.
I'm shocked.
No, well, it gets way better.
This woman, who apparently is trying to smuggle an enormous stick, doesn't understand what all the fuss is about.
Sometimes people have to have something to be angry about, and they've chosen this, and I would rather be safe.
Somewhere there's an unfortunate man that has to go to bed with her every night and then wake up in the morning and see that she's still there. It wasn't a dream.
And then finally, this man complains that the wrong people are being selected at
I don't look anything like Osama bin Laden. I'm not tall enough. I'm not the right color hair. And I don't speak the language. And there's about 99% of the people in this airport, same situation. This is a joke. We should profile if it's a security risk.
Does it say where he's at? Is he in San Francisco?
He's in San Francisco, yes.
Did he say we should profile?
Yes.
Because that's what it sounded like.
See,
yes,
and you're latching onto a totally different thing. For Don and I, it was that he doesn't look like Osama bin Laden. He's not tall enough.
Okay. And he doesn't have the same color hair.
Just play that one more time here.
I don't look anything like Osama bin Laden. I'm not tall enough. I'm not the right color hair. And I don't speak the language. And there's about 99% of the people in this airport, same situation. This is a joke. We should profile if it's a security risk.
So he's not tall enough, which to him is like, that's the line of distinction. That's the point of demarcation. And also his idea that, because you can tell he's trying to make the logical, you know, in his own, you know, toothless rube kind of way, he's trying to make a logical argument in a presentation for why they're doing enhanced profiling, which means that he must believe what he's saying, which indicates that he is under the impression they are actually searching for Osama bin Laden.
Like that's the thing that gets me is like it's only Osama bin Laden they're looking for.
Like that's the guy. Yeah. That's it. That's the sum total of what the searching is all about.
maybe they think he's hiding behind your testicles.
That's entirely possible.
My testicles are big enough that he could hide.
I've heard that.
Just gonna say they could shade a small boy.
It's Dr. No Love. Osama bin Laden might be in there. Well, also in the soundbite hit parade, we have heard from President Obama today, who is delivering a Thanksgiving message to the nation via his weekly address in the White House.
To every American, I am thankful for the privilege of being your president. To all of our service members stationed around the world, I'm honored to be your commander-in-chief. And from the Obama family to yours, have a very happy Thanksgiving.
This isn't a long list of like things he has to record. This is probably like, we were saying, this is probably like in his first day in office when he just wanted to get it all out of the way, where they just hand him like the turkey pardoning thing, and they hand him the thing he has to say at Christmas, and you know.
He has his Easter address before the egg roll. And
knock him out in one setting.
He says his family will indulge in some common holiday traditions.
Today, like millions of other families across America, Michelle, Malia, Sasha, and I will sit down to share a Thanksgiving filled with family and friends, and a few helpings of food and football, too.
Wow.
He's having food.
Yeah, food.
A few helpings of food.
Our theory was that he was attempting to pick something that would be non-offensive to the largest amount of Americans possible. And so as a result, they just never really got back to the specifying what part of food it might actually, what kind of food it might actually be.
Well, we all know that there are people who will take offense at whatever specific. There's people out there right now who are going, he's going to eat food?
Two helpings?
There are people starving in this country, and he's eating two helpings.
We've got your top five coming up later on. We'll do the top five thank you songs, which is fantastic, by the way. And we've got a job watch still to get to as well. We want to take a moment to talk about I'm getting a little arugula on my teeth there. Okay. I'm going to take a moment to talk about the Squires Electric, one of our fine business partners, helps to make this cavalcade of whimsy possible today and every weekday right here at the Emerson News Network. You can contact Squires Electric by going to squireselectric.com at 503-252. What's going on over there?
I dropped turkey down my shirt.
Okay. How much, let me ask you this, in terms of sheer tonnage, How much food would you say you spill onto yourself every year? Is it more or less than 10 pounds, would you think?
Probably less, but not by much.
How much food would you say goes into your shirt?
Several ounces.
Let me ask you a third question. Of the food that you drop into your clothing or onto yourself, how much of that happens between the hours of like 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. here and in this studio? Because it seems to happen on an almost daily basis. So either I have some sort of I have some sort of destructive or interruptive effect on your spatial relations and your ability to place things in your mouth correctly, or you're just doing this constantly and I am seeing a representative sampling of your behavior.
It probably happens all of the time, so much that I don't even think about it.
What if I were to ask Patrick?
You could ask Patrick.
Really? I mean, do you think he would say that, like, no, Don does that all the time?
Yes, I think he would probably say that.
Okay.
Do you want me to go get him? Do you want to ask
Do you
him?
Always eat... Let me ask you this. When you drop... By the way, this series of interrogatives about Dawn's habit of dropping food onto herself is brought to you by Squires Electric, 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. Electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind, that is Squires Electric, 503-252-1609. When you drop food on yourself, how often would you say that the food is then taken off your shirt and placed in your mouth?
I'd say a good 98% of the time.
Does it have to do with the size of the food, or is it the kind of food? Like, you wouldn't do it with cottage cheese,
No, it would depend on the... I mean, obviously, if it has to be wiped away, I'm not going to, like, suck it off the napkin.
Have you ever... Let me ask you this.
But if it's a solid piece of something...
In your recent memory, as an adult, let's say within the last couple of years, have you ever dropped food onto your shirt or onto your clothing... Or onto yourself in any way that couldn't really just be picked off as a, you know, like a piece of cheese, you know, you can just lift it off and it separates cleanly from the clothing. Have you ever dropped food onto the clothing that couldn't just be removed cleanly and where you actually just put the clothing in your mouth and went?
Yes, okay. I have done that.
What kind of food is that most likely to happen with?
I'd say most likely a soft food like ice cream or pudding.
David, anything you want to add to this? Any questions you have?
No, I'm.
We're all good?
Yeah, I'm speechless today, okay. But also thankful that I'm here to witness this. So,
hey, you know, here's the thing: you could probably come back. You know, just pick a day, and you'll be able to witness this.
The best part of it is that Dawn's not arguing the point with you. She's not getting defensive.
Well,
that she's just it's this. This
what is she going to say? That never happens.
Yeah, she's just resigned to. Yeah.
Well, yeah. You're making that up.
We have established in the past that I'm less like a regular woman and more sort of like Jack Klugman. So
here's the thing. Here's the other thing, by the way. Just it always follows this because I've got really, I guess I must have really acute peripheral vision because it happens often at the beginning of the show, which is where like the bulk of your eating seems to take place right as I'm about to introduce you to do something. It's like you have some weird sense for like right as I'm about to go, and Dawn Taylor has this to say. And at that moment, you're just like shoving a wedge, you know, of cheese or something, or just like, you know, you're just finding like a, you know, like a fistful of ham to go in. And I'll say, and now with more on that, here's Dawn Taylor. And at that moment, it's like just out of my peripheral vision, I'll see something. It's like seeing you know what it is? It's like seeing a man fall from a skyscraper several blocks away, you know, as the piece of cheese goes and tumbles down like the front of you. And then I will look up and I will look at you and it's like we'll make eye contact for a second as the food is sitting on the front of you, you know, like on your shirt. And you will look at me and it's sort of like a, did you see that? And it's, you know, it's like when you, it's like when your dog walks out front and he sees a squirrel and the dog and the squirrel look at each other for just half a second wondering if each is aware of the other's presence. Yeah. And then it's like the dam just bursts and you just look down, you just pick it up and you put the cheese back on the table. Yeah. SquiresElectric.com, 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. That is how you can contact Squires Electric. All right.
And, put that
so
over
forth.
There.
Okay, you just put that out of harm's way. All right. Let's get a few more of these taken care of, and we'll take a break. We'll come back with the top five here in just a skosh. You were listening to the Thanksgiving edition of the Rick Emerson radio program. Here's Dawn Taylor.
Let's do the job watch.
Is this happy or sad? Well, they're never good, are they? We haven't had it. All right, here's your job watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Minimum wage! Yeah!
Here is Dawn Taylor with your job watch.
In the Republican Thanksgiving Day address, Georgia Congressman-elect Austin Brown promises that GOP lawmakers in the House will do whatever it takes to lower the nation's unemployment rate.
As much as we have to be thankful for, too many Georgians and too many Americans have been out of work for far too long.
Our new Republican majority is ready to focus on creating jobs and putting a stop to the runaway spending in Washington, D.C.
No matter how many government employees we have to fire, we will make sure that the unemployment rate goes down.
Brown says the incoming class of GOP lawmakers is uniquely qualified to help rein in federal spending.
We've got 33 small business people, folks who understand what it's like to sign the front of a paycheck and not just the back of one. It's a new breed of leaders for a new majority and a new Congress.
All right, he's doing a little Emerson there, where he's speaking smugly as a small business owner. See, that's the thing. It makes your logic impenetrable and bulletproof. Just no one can question you on anything.
Brown stresses the diverse backgrounds of incoming Republicans.
Our freshman class includes 7 farmers, 6 medical doctors, 3 car dealers, a former FBI agent.
3 corridors?
Car doers?
Dealers.
Oh, dealers.
Our freshman class includes 7 farmers, 6 medical doctors, 3 car dealers, a former FBI agent, a pizzeria owner, and a former NFL lineman.
Okay.
Well, there you go.
I have nothing to add. All right.
I thought Eve was saying car doers, like that was the way they say mechanic in the South.
No, that's just the way they say car dealers.
That clearly is exactly the right conglomeration of people to fix the economy.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. All right.
Yeah, I'm sleeping so much more soundly now.
Let's do one more here, and then we will take a break.
Air passengers in Russia were left stunned recently when a fellow flyer burst naked out of the toilet and ran around the plane. Ruslan Nevchik, 23, was eventually overpowered by crew and detained by police after an emergency landing in Vladivostok. It's not the first time a flight has been disrupted by naked passengers. Last year, Keith Wright from New York was arrested after he stripped naked during a flight. Wright was taken into custody after deciding to take off all of his clothes during a U.S. Airways flight from North Carolina to Los Angeles. He later told the FBI he was suffering from bipolar disorder and had not taken his prescribed medication before leaving New York. He also allegedly told the FBI he recalled nothing about the flight or his behavior.
It's kind of impressive that he was able to get all his clothes off, because you get to figure anybody starts a ruckus, you know, on a plane now, it just gets put down like a calf at a rodeo. You know, that's like the rest of the passengers aren't going to. But I mean, that's an involved process, really, to strip off your clothing.
Especially in one of those bathrooms on the plane, because they're very tiny.
No, it's like one of those, you know, you screw around at all. It's like would you say the first one was on a Russian plane?
Yes.
It was on a Russian airline, which is like, imagine just the levels of anxiety that must involve, you know, flying an airplane out of Russia, where you're sitting there wondering if the flight crew like drank the hydraulic fluid or something before you took off.
I think being naked, though, in that situation would be even more anxiety producing. Generally, when I'm nervous about something, I want as many clothes on as possible.
Yeah, when I'm freaked out, I want my clothes on, because being naked just freaks me out even more.
Yeah.
So. By the way, somebody wants to know if David Walker is a Harry Potter fan, and if so, if you've seen the new Harry Potter film.
Yes, yes to both questions.
Are you a fan of the books as well as the
the
films?
I am a fan of the books as well as the films. I saw the new movie Sunday and was disappointed that it just wasn't a 5-hour epic. I just would have rather sat there for 5 hours. I was I wanted to get to Harry Potter and the ass kicking at Hogwarts versus Harry Potter and the Whiners in the Woods.
Harry Potter and the Wandering in the Forest.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I know is the thing that a lot of people had a problem with, and I didn't that much. With the book, it does seem like there's sort of, I think Stephen King actually said that there seems to be a bit much of the wandering around from tree to tree, which I didn't have that much of a problem with it. I didn't feel the book was padded out the way that some people did. But do you feel like it's, from what you've seen from the first half of Deathly Hallows, you don't feel like it was padded out at all? You feel like it's a...
No, I think it flowed pretty good. I wasn't feeling the need to check my watch. I was pretty excited, but I also, knowing what's going to come in the second movie and what happens in the second half of the book, there was a lot of let's just get to it. Okay.
Right. Right.
Court Weber and I were talking about this the other day, and I just hope they do right by Neville Longbottom. That's all. I hope they don't mess him up in the movie, and they let him do all the things he needs to do, because Neville's my favorite character.
So you can, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Aaron Duran and I we've talked about and I won't give any spoilers here, but we talked about about chapter 33, which is where
somebody makes an observation about the appearance of Harry Potter's eyes, and it was just, and I was just blubbering like a child when I read it. I was just crying like a girl whose cotillion has been canceled. And it was really beautiful. I mean, it's just probably the single best piece of writing that I've seen J.K. Rowling do. I mean, it was the best piece of writing in all the books, you know, for my money. But it's like you just wonder. You know, it's that, because I know people, and you probably do as well, who just resisted seeing any of the movies because it's the whole thing of how can it live up to the whatever's in my head. And, you know, it's like with children's books especially, you get screwed so often on that, where children's, like, I remember watching a movie where I really wanted to like, which is the James and the Giant Peach adaptation, which I wanted to love. Yeah, I just so wanted it to be. And it's like as soon as they busted out, like, robot sharks or something, I was just like, I'm out. Like, I can't watch this.
I want to say, because of David Walker, I've now read the first two books in the Chaos Walking trilogy by Patrick Ness. And I don't think I have ever read books before, ever in my life, that so wanted me to go find the author and just punch him in the face. Honest to
God. What is Chaos Walking?
The first book is The Knife of Never Letting Go. Yep. The second is The Ask and the Answer. There's sort of it's a hard book to explain because it's almost a post-apocalyptic kind of book, except it takes place on
another planet.
But they're really good books. They're really good, but they are so bleak. And also in the first book, honest to God, and these are like young adult novels.
Yeah.
And the first book, and I'm just going to spoil this for people because honest to God, I don't want to get you to get kicked in the nuts the same way I was. You know, the whole first like 2/3 of the book is like him developing this incredible relationship with his dog, and then of course the dog gets killed, and I started weeping. I was reading the book in the bathtub before I went to bed, and I just started crying. And I got out of the tub and I went in the bedroom. Patrick comes and he's like, "What's wrong?" I'm like, "This is stupid book, God damn!" And I had to put the book aside. I could not pick it back up again for like a week because I was so angry and upset.
Well done.
And then I started reading it again, and I got through that book. And the first book ends with just like
be continued. Yeah,
yeah, but his to be continued is like, oh, and you're all screwed. Yeah. End of part one. You're like, duh! So then I got into part, so now I've been through the first two, but it's like there are definite points in both of the books where you just kind of go, man, if Patrick Ness was here right now, I would just punch him in the face for what he's doing to me.
Well, this is like the it's like when I got halfway through The Road when I was reading that, and I made the observation at that point. It was like halfway or 2/3 of the way through The Road, which is not like a long novel. I mean, you could read that in a day probably, but it took me weeks. Because it was like I would sit down at night to read and I would look at it and I would just go, Christ. And it was like pulling a black shroud over myself. And I actually said at one point that this is a great book. It's awesome. It's well written. It's a stunning vision. He's obviously, you know, he was seeing very clearly with his mind's eye when he wrote this. It's a believable world, and it's perhaps the definitive work of post-apocalyptic fiction. But I said that I was no longer enjoying it. It's a great book that I am no longer enjoying and that I am actively disliking and that I would never read again. And so I have had those moments. Hello, sir, madam, as the case may be. You're on the Rick Emerson radio program. Who this?
Hey, it's Kristen Bowie.
Hello, Kristen Bowie. How are you today?
I'm doing fabulously. How are you, Rick Emerson?
We are fantastic. It is our annual Thanksgiving show, and so we David Walker is here perplexing everybody with the revelation that he doesn't drink. So Dawn is counterbalancing that by drinking bourbon, occasionally spilling food, and we're about to open some Slayer dark ale. So how was your Thanksgiving, Kristen Bowie?
That's fabulous. It's much more eventful than mine. Someone stole my license plate down in Gresham yesterday, so.
Life doesn't work out well for you, does it?
I mean,
just in a general
sense.
I do seem to, you know, have the worst luck in the world, so.
Were you the,
I
think you were.
It's a good thing that I don't gamble.
Were you the person who bought an Android phone and then dropped it into a mud puddle the next day?
Yes.
Yeah.
Get this. I bought the G1. Had it for about 4 days, and while I was on the phone to add the insurance plan to my account, I dropped it and completely submerged it in water.
Awesome. I mean, not for you, but, well, I'm sorry to hear about your license plates. So they didn't steal your car, just the actual plates?
No, but mind you, this is out in Gresham. So it explains a lot.
But, I mean, it seems like in Gresham, that's a thing where you just go, I mean, you know, there are no half measures when it comes to crime in that unfortunate port of souls. I mean,
here's the thing. I now drive a PT Cruiser, and I want them to steal it. They don't steal the car. They leave the car. They just take the plate.
I see. Okay. Well, that explains a lot. Yeah, they're probably assuming that they're probably assuming the car just belongs to a woman from you know, a woman from Tannisborn who's on her way to play Bunko with her friends.
What exactly is Bunko?
I don't know.
Nobody can explain this to me.
It's a thing that soccer moms apparently play, and that now exists only as a cultural reference to me because I don't actually know what it is and I couldn't explain it. Dawn Taylor?
I just
don't know. Yeah. I know that when I used to type up the events that were happening at the senior center for the newspaper I worked for, they had weekly Bunko games, but I have no idea what it is.
Yeah, no, I got to. I got
nothing. All I know is it involves copious amounts of 7-layer nacho dip, and that's about it.
Okay, then. So what does your Thanksgiving consist of? I mean, apart from driving a PT Cruiser that that has no identifying marks on it.
Well, eventually I'm going to go drink lots of wine and hopefully not fall into a gutter somewhere, so...
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Aim
to have
high.
Goals. Yeah.
Excellent. You and I don't have the date the day and time in front of me, so I'm failing on that front. So you are the host of Don't Panic Portland on Cascadia.fm.
Yes,
when can and for those who are longtime listeners, you remember Kristen Bowie, who was you know, was on the Rick Emerson Show every now and again, and also was the co-host of Musicology on AM 970. Where can you be heard now, Kristen Bowie?
I can be heard Monday through Friday on Cascadia.fm at 5 p.m.
Excellent, 5 p.m. Pacific time. Yeah. That is Kristen Bowie, and it is always a pleasure to hear your dulcet tones. You have to come by and visit the show sometime. You have to drop by the studio one of these days.
Definitely. I'm open to it. You just have to invite me. You know.
All right. Excellent. I'm gonna overlook the implied snarkiness in that remark and pretend that I. Pretend that wasn't there. Have a happy Thanksgiving. We will we'll talk to you very soon. We may deign to invite you to pay an actual visit to the studio sometime soon. All right, drive safe.
Thank
and
you,
we'll
Rick.
Talk to you soon. There you go. That's Kristen Bowie, ladies and gentlemen. Jesus.
Drinking lots of wine and trying not to fall into a gutter, just like the pilgrims did.
I knew that was her. She was the one that told me that. And I forgot the little detail, the little fillip to the story that she was actually on the phone to get it insured as it sort of like. And she described it as being like, you know, just in her field of vision, like a little 6x6 slow motion horror film unfolding as she was trying to, you know, like reaching down, trying to block the assassin's bullet of the phone going into a mud hole. And she said the worst part is that she, you know, she did the whole like... And she just reached down to pick it up, and she could kind of hear, like, she could hear the insurance agent's voice on the other end kind of gurgling through the mud that was just seeping, just permeating the actual guts of the phone itself. Awesome. All right. We will do this. We'll come back on the other side. What was that? You just arched your eyebrows at me.
No.
I didn't know if you were sending me a message just there with your facial expression.
No.
All right. We'll do this. Well, on the other side, we'll come back. We'll do the top five. We'll find out what else is going on in the world of Mr. David Walker and so forth. This is really just a thinly veiled excuse for me to have more arugula because it's on the other side of the room. So you're listening to the Emerson News Network. Stay right there.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Indeed. It is the Rick Emerson radio program brought to you in part by Sorrell's Vintages at 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. And you may not have actually, if you've not gone into this place, you may have seen it before. You may know where it is. It's directly across from the Baghdad Theater, and it's right next door to Powell's Books. And I mentioned this yesterday, and again, I tried to find a different way to phrase this other than saying that it looks more expensive than it is, because I know that even saying it looks expensive, that can be, you know, sometimes people, you know, people just get kind of scared off by that. You go into Sorrell's Vintages, and it really is just a fantastic collection of vintage furniture. And when I say, are you going to hold those right out of reach? Is that the thing where I'm going to reach for the arugula and then you pull it away? Bastard. All right, thank you. That's David Walker that was the bastard in that sentence just there. Hold on a second.
He's a vile trickster.
That's fantastic. So the thing about Sorrell's Vintages, which is awesome, that's just... of the thing.
That is some fine arugula.
It really is. This is really just exceptional. Sorrell's Vintages, though, it's not, you know, it's not like reproductions. It's not where they found something that was vintage and then just, you know, having some company in Southeast Asia just crank them out by the thousands. What they do is they actually travel all around the Northwest. They go all around Portland and, you know, Washington and the surrounding areas. And
Anton, who works there, will actually go from city to city, from state to state, and they will actually find the best vintage things. They'll go to, you know, they'll go to estate sales or people who are just selling some of their furniture, or they'll go to other stores, and they actually do sort of a pre-screening process where the stuff you then see at Sorrell's Vintages is just the best vintage furniture, and stuff typically starting around the 1950s, going up to the early 70s, is just the very best of the best. And it's clean, it's ready to put in. It's not like, you know, you just like go to some of those vintage stores and it really is just a store full of junk. And you get the, you know, you get the thing home and you got to clean it off and it's got grease and it's got dirt and it's got grime and you find out it's broken. You know, this is not going to be the case with something you get at Sorrell's Vintages. They actually, it is ready to go in your home. Because when they get it, they clean it, they polish it, they shine it, they restore it, they do whatever needs to be done to make it perfectly presentable. But it is still an authentic thing from, you know, the 50s, from the 60s, from the 70s. One side of the store is all vintage. The other side has new merchandise. But really, if you are looking to, if you've got maybe your first brand new, you know, the first home that you're actually, you know, of your own that you're not renting, or if you've got a really nice apartment, maybe you just don't have furniture to match, or you're looking for a different look for it, or you got Christmas coming up and you're wanting to get something for somebody that has a great, like, everybody's got the friend that is so stylish that you are sometimes afraid to purchase anything for them because you think that whatever you get isn't really going to live up to their standards. You go to a place like Sorrell's Vintages, and it's everything there is it's fantastic. Everything they sell is beautiful, and it's just a question to figure out exactly which of their items you want. It really is a great store. Don't just take my word for it. You go in, you're going to see for yourself. 3713 Southeast Hawthorne, right across from the Baghdad Theater, right next to Powell's Books. Please do tell them, Daniel and Anton, that you heard about it right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Back after this with more from David Walker, and we'll do the top five as we get ready to conclude today's Thanksgiving extravaganza. Stay right there. You're listening to The Rick Emerson Show.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. We're here with Mr. David Walker. You didn't drop anything on yourself just now, but you did this facial expression. It was the facial expression that Bill Murray makes in Ghostbusters at the beginning when he is quizzing the girl, the cute girl, not the guy, but the cute girl, about the what number, you know, what shape is on the cards, and he does that thing of like he kind of shuts his eyes real hard and does that. You just did that. And I know it took me like 15 seconds to explain that, but in my head it was just a fraction of a second where you did it, and I immediately, like, for just the tiniest sliver of time, Bill Murray's face was superimposed over your own.
Yeah, if I had a nickel for every time a man has said that to me.
We're here with David Walker. Before we talk about your latest project, which is one of your many, because you're like, we were just talking during the break about whether or not. There's that phrase that people would say they're underemployed sometimes, which is where it's like, and that is a thing that you used to hear, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. People were working enough hours that they couldn't get a job somewhere else, but too few hours to get health care or whatever. But that has now changed into, it's so hard, this sounds dumb, but it's so hard to tell whether somebody is, or whether even you are unemployed or not.
Yeah.
Because everybody's got about 17 different projects they're working on, some of which are maybe going to pay off down the road, some of which are happening now but aren't really paying. Some of which are paying a little bit, but it's like, but you feel like you're just sort of temping on it. I mean, so you're that way. So we'll, we'll talk about one of your many projects here in just a second, because you're one of those guys that's always juggling like 100 different things. I want to mention that coming up Tuesday on this very fine radio program, Tuesday 1:30, Mr. Zach Whedon will be in the studio with us. He's going to be here. They're going to be showing a special big screen showing of episode 14, Objects in Space, of Firefly, and he's going to be doing a signing of. Sorry, he's going to be doing a signing of Serenity, The Shepherd's Tale, at Things from Another World, the Hollywood location, that evening as well. So it's all free. I think they're asking for canned food donations for the Firefly screening. You find out more at tfaw.com. TFAW. .com, but he will be joining us in the studio at 1:30. Are you going to let me ask you this? Is this going to be one of those things where you don't nerd out at all? You nerd out in advance, but then you're calm and cool and collected when he's here, or you're going to nerd out after the fact? Do you think? If you had to guess,
I would nerd out in advance.
All right, just get it out of your system.
Yeah, it's like I'm feeling very, very nerdy and excited about it right now, and that of course makes me feel vaguely pathetic. So what I will do then is I will. Just read up on some stuff and research some things so that I have something intelligent to say so that by the time he gets here, I feel cool and like I don't care.
Did you see the Futurama from a month and a half or so ago that took place at Comic-Con?
Yes.
The where it's Lur and then, what? Joss Whedon is here? It's just like the greatest. I don't know why that just occurred to me. Mr. David Walker, your new project is a program called Missing Reel. You can find out more about it online, by the way, at missingreel.tv.
Yes.
With a fellow named Kurt Lloyd. And it really is just, and I've known Kurt on and off for a couple of years. He did a show called Super Atomic TV that Tim Riley was part of. And so Missing Reel is, they're shortish, I don't say they're documentaries, but it's a series that analyzes, every episode analyzes a specific grindhouse film or a type of grindhouse film, a part of the genre.
Yes, a genre, or maybe we'll do a profile on a filmmaker or an actor. So it's sort of a, they're very abbreviated history lessons more than anything else, because we don't get overly critical of some of the movies, or of any of the movies for that matter. There's definitely been some stuff we've profiled that I've said to Kurt, well, I'll never watch that movie again, but you know, we're still
right.
We're still talking about it. So and again, that's Missing Reel, reel.tv, and that's fun. That's one of those projects again that you work on where it's like it takes up amount of your time, but it's like, well, it's sort of like a hobby or a voluntary thing until we can figure out how to monetize it.
It really is a great show, though, and I'm not just saying that. I think we actually talked about this when you guys were in Outlook Portland, that it's one of those things where, and I'm not trying to knock anybody else with this. I'm really not. This is not in reference to anything in particular. But technology has gotten to the point where, you know, in any field, in any sort of creative enterprise, people can go to the store and they go to Fry's Electronics or whatever, and you can drop, you know, a few $100s, mm-hmm. you know, a few thousand at most, and they have the technical ability to create a product of whatever variety, you know, whether it's an game, or whether it's, you know, whether it's an online television series, whether it's a movie, whether it's whatever, and it, you know, but that's like 40% of the battle, if that much.
But that doesn't mean you should do it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you've got to have something to say, and you got to have a good idea, and you got to really have the creative ability to pull it off. And we've all seen, you know, web-based television series where you look at it and you go, like, well, I can't, like, why would I ever watch this? Where the technical part of it is just, you know, that's just one section. It really is, you guys, you know, it comes from a love of the actual movies and, you know, from the skill you know, associated with doing a show like that. I mean, it's a great looking show, and it really is. It's very entertaining for anybody that wants, who's either a big fan of Grindhouse or wants to get a little bit of like an entry level introduction to it. So it's missingreal.tv. What else are you, what other plates are you spinning?
Well, next week on Thursday, December 2nd, there's going to be a sneak preview of my new feature film at the Hollywood Theater that I co-wrote and produced and directed. And I don't think it sucks. I think it might be okay. It's sort of an arty farty movie. And so that's my dinner with AJ, which is, again, screening Thursday, 7 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater. And that's a benefit for Project Youth Doc, which is a nonprofit organization that teaches like teenagers how to make documentaries and helps them become more media savvy, which is something that I think is pretty important this day and time and age or whatever we want to call it. And then I'm actually self-publishing my first novel, which will be – I'm still working the kinks out of that because it's a tremendous undertaking because it's no longer just publishing a book. It's getting your website up and running, and it's having the electronic version of the book and all that sort of stuff.
And sometimes I forget what we have talked about on the show and what we haven't. So I'll let you – do you want to say what it's about? I've lost track of what you've said publicly, and you know, I don't want to give anything away.
No, it's a young adult action-adventure novel. And so it's far removed from almost anything that I've ever done at this point in the game. Everyone was expecting me to write a book about film or something like that, but this is I'm telling people that it's Spider-Man meets Harry Potter. That's the best way to describe it. And I have an agent and a manager. We've been shopping the book for close to a year now. The fact that I was able to get an agent and a manager says that it's not a terrible book, but right. The publishing industry is sort of in the toilet and no one's taking chances with new writers. And I just figured it's time for me just to sort of, you know, become proactive rather than reactive. So I'm still working the kinks out of it. It's the biggest thing I've ever embarked on. And it's the, for people that have known me for a long time, this is the equivalent to me getting married. Like I'm starting a publishing company, and in 2011, that's where the vast amount of my energy will be spent is operating that little empire.
So now say this, say, as a small business owner, Rick, let me tell you about taxes.
Exactly.
And so when you say self-publishing, is that because, you know, we were talking to Aaron Duran, and he's mm-hmm. doing the same thing with his comic, La Brujilla.
Yeah.
Do you mean electronic publishing, or is it actually self-publishing physical copies, or both? I mean, how does that?
I'm going to do both. I will the first third of the book I will wind up serializing and giving it away for free to build the fan base. That'll be online, and then after that, in all likelihood, will first be the electronic version because it's more inexpensive to put that out, mm-hmm. and I can sell that at lower prices. And then from there, hard copy, not hardcover copies of the book, but actual physical copies that you can like read on the toilet or the bus. Although you can do all that stuff now with the iPad, but I'm a tactile person. I prefer to, you know.
So great that you go right to the toilet.
Why, you know, books were invented, or the toilet was invented, one or the other, so that you.
It's the common man's library.
That's right.
Okay, yeah. It's like one of those smoking rooms they have at like a, you know, a Harvard Finals Club or something.
Exactly.
But more accessible. people, what is the, do you have a timeline for when this is going to be happening?
You know, I'll be honest. I'm not going to lie. I'm about 6 months behind on the timeline. I will have the website up and running no later than February, and perhaps the electronic version available in February as well.
Because it's a saga, right? I mean, it's
yeah.
a whole...
Yeah, the book right now, I haven't designed the book. I'm also designing, you know, doing all the typesetting and all that. I'm doing everything on my own. And so I'm not exactly sure what the final page count is going to be, but when you're holding the physical copy of the book, it'll be somewhere between 350 and 400 pages. So it's not like, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, I wrote a book and here it is, and they hand it to you and it's a pamphlet.
Right.
This is the first in a series of three. Again, it's my bid at being the next whomever. You know, I don't want to be the next J.K. Rowling or the next Suzanne Collins or Patrick Ness, but I think I've written a solid book. And I just got tired of hearing, you know, the publishers and the editors going, nah, there's no market for this. Which
boys don't read.
Yeah, exactly. That's the main thing that they've told me is boys don't read. So I'm going to attempt to prove them wrong. And the way I see it is, you know, I'm setting my goals very very conservatively in terms of units sold, both electronic and hard copy versions. Yeah, so it's I feel good about it. I mean, I'm learning a lot. It's the learning curve is intense because it's
What's the hardest thing to learn?
The hardest thing to learn is where am I going to get the money to pay for everything? You know, it's you know, when you're a small business, as a small business person,
there you go.
You know, you're sinking your own money into something, and you know, you try to explain to somebody else, well, yeah, you know, my book is $10, and no, I can't give it to you for free. You know, your friends and family, everyone wants something for free, and the reality is that isn't going to happen. And so it's I'm gearing my friends and family up for the fact that you know, it's actually easier to walk up to your friends and go, hey, can you give me $20?
Right.
Than it is to get them to go, hey, why don't you buy my book for $10?
Right.
I mean,
right.
It's pretty. I'm always shocked by that. As someone who's, you know, done self-publishing and put out his own movies on DVD and comics, you name it, my friends never want to pay for anything.
You know,
though, I will say, I bought a copy of Bad Santa's Revenge.
Yes, you did.
And you mailed it to me. And then when I saw you the next time, you're like, why didn't you just ask me for one? I
was going to say, I got mine for free, yeah. So thanks.
I guess a lot of it's the principle. I mean, it's It is difficult to charge your friends to take money from your friends. It's difficult to ask for it, and as a small business person, that's the difficult thing. You know, it's like with you know, I go to like Lisa and Brian at Big Ass Sandwiches. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going there just because I like them and they're decent people. I go there because I like the food and I want to support them.
Right.
And I'm the older I get, the more I try to support, you know, small business people like myself and just really get out there and send other people there. But other people just don't get it. You know, it's the people who want to pirate everything off the internet, whether it's music or films, and there's no reason to not try to do something, especially when there's, like, for me, writing a book. You know, I was talking to someone not that long ago, and they said, I'd never write a book if someone didn't give me an advance. And I was like, well, that's why I have a book and you don't. You know?
Boosh! Yeah. Right to the junk.
I mean, come on. If I had waited for someone to pay me to do any of the things that I've done in my lifetime, I'd still be, you know, working part-time at, you know, a video store or Music Millennium or something like that. Not even the video store, because all the video stores I've worked at are out of business. So,
well, you know, and my thing is, I forget who I told this to, but Gene Simmons said this great thing one time. He was talking about Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park.
Yeah,
and which is, you know, either the world's best or worst film, kind of depending on one's point of view. But he was talking about, you know, what a terrible film it is, and he has no illusions about that. He's like, no, it's awful, you know. And he's like, what are you gonna do? But he said the greatest thing. He said that when he is, you know, at the end of his life, you know, when he's however old and he's sitting there in the old folks' home getting ready to shuffle off the, you know, the mortal coil, he said that he wants to be able to look back, and if somebody, you know, he said he wants to be able to go down the checklist. And when somebody says, like, did you do that? He wants to be able to go, yeah, I did that, you know? So it's like, yeah, he was in a band. Yeah, he, you know, he had a TV show. He wrote a book. He made a movie. And what you're talking about is, like, you don't have to be Gene Simmons to do that, you know, especially stuff like writing. I mean, it's like, you know, you can Jim Goad, who is kind of fallen off the radar, I guess, maybe a little bit. I don't really know what is up with him. But Jim Goad, who many of you know, he wrote a book called The Redneck Manifesto, which is sort of what put him on the terrible title, great book. Really one of the most impactful books that I'd read in a long, long time when I read it. It made a huge impact on me because the writing was so forceful and so blunt and direct. But in Redneck Manifesto, which is all about kind of class distinction and division in America and using Portland as a microcosm of the class structure in this country. But he talked about working at, he was either working at Freightliner or like at a lumber mill or something. But I mean, a real, like, you know, grease under the fingernails, real, like, beat you down, you know, blue collar job that just left him sapped. And he talked about getting up at 4 a.m., you know, and just and at one point, you know, just using the coffee. And I think later on he actually said he talked about using meth to do this. But he talked about getting up at 4 a.m. even though he'd gotten to bed at midnight and he was exhausted and he was going to face another exhausting day, like working on the line at Freightliner or whatever. And he said he didn't have any choice, though. He said, because if I didn't work, I'd starve. But if I didn't write, I'd die.
Yeah.
And that's and I certainly in no way am I anything like that. I mean, that's a work ethic that I certainly don't have. But you know, but you got to give it up to guys who are just like, look, I want to do it, and just because nobody's making me the offer, that's no reason not to do it. You know, there's nobody standing in your way.
The truth is that the two things we all lack in our lives are money and time. And everyone will always say either, oh, I don't have enough money or I don't have enough time. And the truth is that there's never going to be enough money and there's never going to be enough time. So the key is how do you find a way to do these things that you know? And of course, if I say, oh, I want to tour Europe and I have no money, that might be something that's not quite the same as saying I want to write a book. But there's always a ways around almost anything other than coming back from the dead, and I'm working on that one too. So,
Badass Mofo, still the website for you?
Yes,
that is badassazzmofo.com, Mr. David Walker. Before we end the segment, let's do five, this. Your top
four,
five.
3, 2, 1, 5.
Is that arugula coming back on you over there?
No, I'm yawning.
Okay,
I'm very tired.
Not gonna refund your bourbon or something, are you?
No.
All right, let's check it. Is this because you stayed up all night making spoon bread?
Yes. I was
hey, David, have you tried the spoon bread that Dawn brought today? Oh, no. No, I guess that.
I was up till midnight or so making the damn spoon bread.
Awesome. Here is your top five for today. That is Thanksgiving. This is the live Thanksgiving edition of the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Don't forget, we'll be here. See, now I just want to make another David Walker in Black Friday joke. So you can not laugh at it like a third time. You know, all he wants for Christmas is justice. Sweet Tweetback's badass sale.
I like that.
That's not mine. That's not mine. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We'll be here live. That is the 26th of tomorrow. Today, however, Thanksgiving, we have your top five. These are the top five thank you songs or thank songs from the mind of me, Rick Emerson. Dawn Taylor, are you happy now? Are you looking at the honorable mention?
I am. Only honorable mention, though. Yeah. Honorable mention is Andrew Gold. Thank you for being a friend.
The full 4.5 minute version of this, by the way.
Thank you for being a friend. Travel down a road.
Did Andrew Gold sing Lonely Boy?
I don't know.
Your heart is true,
did you just say yes or had a mouthful of arugula? Okay. I thought all right. I was projecting
that. No, he's just enjoying his arugula. And,
I guess it was just sort of an sound. This is one of those songs like the WKRP theme that has like 900 words to it. You know, it just goes on and on and on. But most people don't know it because you just hear the cut down version for the television. Somewhere Byron Beck is twirling around and smiling. Okay, what kind of crap is that? That he's thanking the other person for being a song, and yet the biggest gift would be for him. What is up with that? Dawn Taylor in the back.
Well, I think he's thanking you for being a friend and then saying you are such an awesome friend that if everybody came and brought you presents, well, I would.
He'd still get the narrator would still get the biggest gift though. That makes no sense. That logically,
well, the biggest one would be from me.
I think it says for me though.
No, from
doesn't
me.
Oh, really? Is that true? Does
yes.
he say from me?
Yes.
My whole life, I thought it was the biggest gift would be for me.
No, it's from me.
Oh, my God. It's like you've just... You know, here's the thing. It's like you found D.B. Cooper. It really... No, seriously. I just feel like my whole life has gotten... Like there's like a kink in my back that's come out or something that's been there forever. I really honestly feel relieved in a little way. My whole life that's bothered me, and now it's gone. And it's just because of one misunderstanding. And here's the frustrating thing is because I'm retarded, I could have figured that out myself, I guess.
Yeah, you could have.
Or looked up the lyrics. Or.
Yeah, there's a thing called the internet.
I'm just saying, it's easier to snipe. It's easier just to complain. This song goes on for another 3 minutes. We're not going to listen to them. These are the top five thank songs for your Thanksgiving and stuff. I forget the little...
Thank you for being a friend.
Sorry, I don't mean to cut off the background vocals right there. I think it's just fade from here on, so we're going to... These are the top five thank songs for November 25th, 2010. Dawn Taylor.
Number five, John Denver, Thank God I'm a Country Boy.
I mean, this is a corny and cheesy song, but how can you not put it on? I mean, it is Americana.
Thank God
country boy. Well, a simple kind of life never did me no harm.
David Walker, John Denver.
What about him? I loved him in Oh God. Classic film.
Do you ever notice how much he looks like Gloria Steinem?
No, Gloria Steinem looks like him.
Okay, oh, that's a fair point.
When he died, he was decapitated when his airplane crashed. His body was recovered by divers. And I remember when I was reading about this, I thought, that's got to be like the most horrible day at work ever. Is when you come home and your wife says, well, how was your day, honey? What'd you do? It's like, well, I had to dive to the bottom of this deep thing of water and retrieve John Denver's head.
Yeah, I mean, what's worse, retrieving his head or retrieving the headless body? Probably the head.
Because there is some guy, that was it. There's some guy who was the guy who found John Denver's head.
I wonder if that's a draws kind of a thing or if it's sort of like a... You know, like an unlucky
catch
lottery.
Catch can,
yeah, you just sort of like, you know, rooting around and you're just hoping it's a bowling ball. Thanks, Don. Thanks for putting that.
Man, I hope I find a foot, you're thinking.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thanks for bringing the room down.
Happy More Thanksgiving.
Arugula? It's no amount of arugula that will cleanse that image.
There aren't enough songs that have the word keen in them either.
Can I just tell you that about a year or so ago, it might have been longer than that, but I was, back home in Kenmore for some reason, it might have been for Christmas or something, and my nephew, who's much younger than I am, my nephew was there, and my wife said, so Ben, how are things? And he just goes, keen, and then stared at her for a while as though challenging her to call him on the use of the word. But you're right, this may be the only well-known American song, this may be the only top 40 hit to use the word keen. Which is odd when you consider the number of things with which it rhymes.
Yeah.
In my memory, it seems like he was on the Muppet Show every week. That probably isn't the case.
That's because he looked like a Muppet.
He kind of did.
He was on a lot, though, yes. He was one of those celebrities of that. He was part of that era.
In a way, it's almost appropriate that he died, because it's hard to picture him existing outside of the 70s.
No.
All right. These are the top five thank songs for your Thanksgiving installment of the Rick Emerson radio program. Don Taylor.
Number four, Sam and Dave, I Thank You.
I want everybody to get up off your seat and get your arms together and your hands together and give me some of that old soul. You didn't have to love me like you did, but you did.
It's an awesome stereo separation.
And I thank you.
I can't remember the name of the drummer here, but the guy who was the house drummer for Stax Volt. He was the who drummed on on Sam and Dave stuff and on most of Otis Redding's song. And his name is escaping me at the moment because the backing band here for Sam and Dave for most of their songs was Booker T and the MGs, and I cannot remember the name of the drummer. And this is the sort of thing I say that drives, like, real musicians, like, you know, guys who, like, you know a lot of music theory and stuff. It drives them crazy. But, this is some of the finest drumming you'll ever hear, because it's all about just the restraint. You know, when you're working with a smaller number of notes or a simpler style of drumming, it's like every moment becomes more and more important. So that guy who, the Standing in the Shadows of Motown guy, the guy who drummed behind all the Temptations records, like, you listen to, My Girl or something. It's just like, just astounding.
It's driving me nuts that I can't think of the drummer.
It's going to drive me. And the best thing that guy ever did, it's on Otis Redding's version of Hard to Handle. And it's this little pickup that he does right after the cover. He goes, you know, but Mama, I'm sure hard to handle now, Mr. And the guy, and he does this little like roll and a pickup. It's just the best thing that's ever been.
Favorite groups of all time.
Sam and Dave?
Yeah.
Would this be Al Jackson Jr.?
It's entirely possible. Now I'm so incited now that nothing sounds right. See right there, it's just that real spare, mean sound. It's just, you know, it's got a fine point on it. And this song shouldn't work because the vocal style is so histrionic. that it should just sound kind of ludicrous, you know, but it's like, but they just sell it. That's fantastic. These are the top five thanks songs. Don Taylor.
Number three, Led Zeppelin, Thank You.
So this is on Led Zeppelin 2. I think, I believe that Robert Plant wrote this about his wife, Maureen. This may have been the first song that Plant wrote for Led Zeppelin. This may have been one of the first songs they didn't steal from some 90-year-old blues man who lacked a lawyer.
If the sun refused to shine, I would still be loving you. When mountains crumble to the sea, there will still be you and me.
You can actually hear him, you can hear his, you can hear him bump the microphone there when he sings.
Kind of woman I give you my all. Kind of woman, nothing more. Little drops of rain.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's your Thanksgiving edition of the show. We'll be back again tomorrow at noon for Legion of News and shortly after 1 o'clock for another live version of this program. We are doing the Thanksgiving Top 5. Here's your Top 5 Thanks Songs. Number 2, Don Taylor.
Number 2 would be The Descendants, Thank You.
I love this song. This is, so none of you, are you much of a Descendants fan?
I am.
So they've never actually said who this is about, I don't think. The rumor's always that this is about Black Flag, but I don't think they've ever clarified it. These are the top five thanks songs. You may be asking yourself, what could possibly be better than Andrew Gold singing Thank You for Being a Friend?
What is it, David Walker? What is the number one thank you song?
I'm so shocked. The number one song is Sly and the Family Stone, Thank You for Let Me Be Myself Again. I love this song.
This is a great song. I used to, when I was a younger man, when I was like 18 or so, I worked at this oldies station. And it was, you know, one of those, it's an oldies station where it was a lot of like, you know, the Turtles and, you know, and like, and really just really bad, terrible, like, what is that? Who is it? The mermaids that sang Popsicles and Icicles? I mean, it was terrible. It was just, you know, Every Mother's Son. It was just like the worst music on earth. And when you're working at an oldie station, it's the worst of all worlds because it's not old enough to be like, you know, like you're not getting to play like, you know, you're not getting to play like, you know, like Benny Goodman, but you're not getting to play like anything remotely approaching rock. Like you're not getting to play any like late era Stones or Beatles or anything. It's just like playing Red Rubber Ball by Bobby V over and over again. Every now and again, though, on the playlist, something would come up that made the whole job tolerable, and this was one of those songs. I have no idea to this day how this snuck onto the playlist of an oldie station in Spokane, but it did. Where is Sly Stone?
He's sort of semi out of retirement. He's been touring, playing with some of the original family. They've done some shows in Europe. little on the eccentric side.
Yeah, well, I read an account a few years ago of a live show he did where somebody had just recounted the 5 or 10 minutes he was actually on stage.
Yeah.
After he like came out and sat down and was mumbling to himself and wandered off stage and was gone for like minutes and came back wiping his nose on the back of his sleeve and then like yelled at the audience for not being appreciative enough. And
I've heard that he's no longer quite that bad, that he's cleaned up his act. I saw a YouTube video not that long ago of a recent show in Germany, but he is definitely, the years have taken their toll.
Well, he's a real drug casualty too, isn't he? I mean, isn't that the, I don't know if he was kind of nuts to begin with and the drugs just exacerbated it, or if it was purely because he just, you know. But I think it's in the Woodstock video, maybe, where you see him. And there's this, if I'm thinking of the right performance, it's at Woodstock, and there's this shot of him. He's clearly just high as a kite, and he's leaning back, and he's got his hand like on the keyboard, and it's like middle C or something. And he's just hitting this one note over and over again for like 5 hours. I mean, but he's feeling it. Like he's grooving on that one key. Not even a chord. It's like a single key. And he's just hitting it over and over again for like, you know, just for like 150 measures. And just like so inside the key that he can't even believe how great it sounds. And, you know, I don't know if he was always that way or if it was purely drugs.
No, I think it was probably a combination of the two. Because when you listen to this group at their best, they're like 100 years ahead of their time.
Yeah.
I think.
Such an amazing song. This is not unlike, actually, in some ways, this is not unlike the Sam and Dave song earlier, and even like the Stones are this way sometimes, where it sounds like there's about 500 things going on at once. I mean, it shouldn't gel the way it does. I mean, this song has so many moving parts going at the same time, and it shouldn't mesh, but it works perfectly. Excellent. David Walker, you can find out more about David Walker at badazmofo.com, BADAZZMOFO.com, and you can watch Missing Reel at Missing Reel, MissingReel.tv, MissingReel.tv. Anything else on the immediate horizon folks should know about?
No, just, you know, be thankful for whatever you have, and if you're not thankful, don't complain to me, because I don't want to hear it.
Well done. As we prepare to draw to a close today's Thanksgiving installment of the Rick Emerson Radio Program, we want to thank another one of our business partners who's helping to make this possible. And by the way, so I think we've now decided it's going to be Saturday the 4th.
Yes, Saturday
it's gonna be
the 4th.
Saturday the 4th. Here's a phrase you never thought you'd hear in your life. So Dawn Taylor's going to be taking a wagon ride to select a Christmas tree for your home.
And not only that, Rick Emerson is going to be there too.
And then we'll be having toddies by the fire.
Yes.
All of these things are true, by the way. I'm making none of this up. ChristmasMountainTrees.com is the website. Christmas Mountain Trees, it's a family farm. The business has been operating, started back in 1942 with the grandfather, who would actually just go up to Mount Hood, cut trees, bring them out to Portland and sell them. And now about 70 years later, it is a third generation family farm going on fourth generation. You can find out more by going to ChristmasMountainTrees.com. They actually start this tomorrow, by the way. They open for business tomorrow. That is Friday the 26th at 10 a.m. And then their regular hours are Wednesday to Friday, 10 to 4:30, Saturday and Sunday, 9 to 4:30, all the way up until December 19th. It's it's not just a Christmas tree. It is an entire experience. Because if you want a tree, I mean, you can go suck down exhaust while you're standing in front of a Walmart somewhere, and there's some guy, named like Yurtz, who will sit there and sell you something from his fine selection of seven trees that he's got left. But you probably don't want to do that. And I will tell you, if you have kids, if you have a family, they would probably prefer to do something that is a little closer to the picture they have in their head of what Christmas looks like. So you go up to Christmas. CHristmasMountainTrees.com. You go to their family farm, and you can see just this the amazing view of the Cascades when you're up there. There are, I swear to God, 85,000 trees. You will probably not want to, like, inspect each one individually, but they got, you know, the roaring fire there. They get your hot drinks. You get, you know, cider. You get chocolate. And you'll actually, you know, they'll sort of take you. You get on the wagon and actually take you through as long as you want. There are people who spend 6 hours. They said,
"Oh, and I will, Rick. I will.
I see, because this is where your OCD will really we will have met its match. It's like an irresistible force.
We will look at
force,
every tree,
immovable object kind of thing. Where you just say, no. It's got to have the circumference of the base has to be, and I mean, you know, really." It's going to be a thing where they just find, you know, like two of us go in and one of us comes out with curiously chipped teeth. So I'm not saying that that's a representative. You know what I'm talking about. ChristmasMountainTrees.com is where you find out more about it. ChristmasMountainTrees.com. Now, if you don't want to do that, they actually have a selection of pre-cut trees as well. You can, and they will actually, if you want, you can actually cut the tree down yourself. They will actually assist you. And I will not for once do the Rocky IV reference here, but they will actually assist you with cutting the tree down. Or you can just say, hey, that's the tree we want. You know, you find it. And the trees, and it's a rotating crop. So it's like there's always a new crop of trees that is 6, 8, 10 years of age that they just look perfect. They look picture perfect. You find the tree. They'll cut it down. They'll take off the extra needles. They'll bale it, which means they just put a piece of twine on it. You take it home. You're good to go. And it really is an entire day-long experience that, again, especially if you have kids, I mean, it's like you can wheel this out no matter how obstreperous they become as teenagers. And for just one moment, you'll be able to make them feel crushing parental guilt once again. And really, you can't put a price on that. That's the reason our Lord and Savior came here. Not have any illusions about that. ChristmasMountainTrees.com is the website. And again, we'll have more details on this as we move forward. But Don Taylor and I will be there on Saturday, the 4th of December. They open tomorrow at 10 a.m. Please tell me you heard about it here. That is ChristmasMountainTrees.com. All right, we want to thank our guest, David Walker. Also, Mr. Aaron Duran, who joined us today. Also, Kristen Bowie, with whom we spoke on the phone. Her program can be heard each and every weekday at Cascadia.fm. And
Jim Willig,
who and Malia, his girlfriend, who brought us this bungalow. What do you think is going to happen to that when the show is over? You angling to take that home with you? Anyone?
Oh, I figured you were going to take it home and just sit and eat it in your living room and then come in tomorrow and just look ill.
Excellent.
Wash it down with Cheetos is what you're going to do.
So long as we're all on the same page. Awesome. fantastic. David Walker can be here Tuesdays on the Court and Fatboy Show at Cascadia.fm as well. The Rick Emerson Show returns again tomorrow from high atop the Emerson News Network building here in the glorious Milk Packing District of Southeast Portland. We thank you for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.